All right, good evening, everybody. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, June 1st, 2015. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern to midnight. If you're listening over another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call-in number is 605-562-3140. And our participant code is 385-698. All radio hosts are invited into the queue if they have any questions or a comment. If anybody would like to email a question, excuse me, you can send it to questions@nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can see their banners on the right-hand side of our website, which the proceeds support NLA's efforts to save America. Excuse me, I got something in my throat here. Anyway, let's see. Also, please support National Liberty Alliance by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab up on the far right of our site. And I guess we'll start off first with reading of God's Word. We're in Proverbs. Kind of not totally prepared here tonight, so. Okay, we're going to be reading Proverbs 8. Proverbs chapter 8, starting in verse 1. Doeth not wisdom cry, and understanding put forth her voice? She standeth in the top of high places, by the way, in the places of the paths. She crieth at the gates, at the entry of the city, at the coming in at the doors. Unto you, O men, I call, and my voice is unto the sons of man. O ye simple, understand wisdom, and ye fools, be ye of an understanding heart. Hear, for I will speak of excellent things, and the opening of my lips shall be right things. For my mouth shall speak truth, and wickedness is an abomination to my lips. All the words of my mouth are in upright is in righteousness. There is nothing forward or perverse in them. They are all plain to him that understandeth, and right to them that find knowledge. Receive my instructions, and not silence. Oh, I'm sorry, hold it. Receive my instruction, and not silver, and knowledge rather than choice gold. For wisdom is better than rubies, and all the things that may be desired are not to be compared to it. I, wisdom, dwell with prudence, and find out knowledge of witty inventions. The fear of the Lord is to hate evil, pride, and arrogancy, and the evil way and the forward mouth do I hate. Counsel is mine, and sound wisdom. I am understanding. I have strength. By me kings reign, and princes decree justice. By me princes rules, and nobles, even all the judges of the earth. I love them that love me, and those that seek me early shall find me. Riches and honor are with me, yea, durable riches and righteousness. My fruit is better than gold, yea, than fine gold, and my revenue than choice silver. I lead in the ways of righteousness, in the midst of the paths of judgment, and I may cause those that love me to inherit substance, and I will fill their treasures. The Lord possessed me in the beginning of his ways, before the works of old. I was set up from everlasting, from the beginning, or even the earth was. When there was no depth, I was brought forth. When there was no foundations, abundant with water. Before the mountains were settled, before the hills was I brought forth. While as yet he had not made the earth, nor the fields, nor the highest part of the dust of the world. When he prepared the heavens, I was there. When he set a compass upon the face of the depth, when he established the clouds above, when he strengthened the foundations of the deep, when he gave to the sea his decree that the waters should not pass his commandment, when he appointed the foundations of the earth, then I was by him, as one brought up with him, and I was daily his delight, rejoicing always before him, rejoicing in the inhabitable parts of his earth, and my delights were with the sons of men. Now therefore hearken unto me, O ye children, for blessed are they that keep my ways. Hear instructions, and be wise, and refuse it not. Blessed is the man that heareth me, watching daily at my gates, waiting at the post of my doors. For whoso findeth me findeth life, and shall obtain favor of the Lord. But he that sinneth against me wrongeth his own soul. All they that hate me love death. Okay, that was Proverbs chapter 8. Okay, tonight we're going to be looking at the mandamus and two mandamuses that we've set in this week. One mandamus was set in on May 27th, and the other one, we mailed that out on the 29th, so they would receive it today, June 1st, but it's dated the 29th, which I think was Saturday, 29th, 30. Was that Saturday? Hang on a minute. It was 30 days, so yeah. Oh, no, it was Sunday. So I guess we mailed it out the 27th, but it's dated the 29th, I believe, yes. All right, anyway, they're short mandamuses. One is focusing in on martial law, and the other one is focusing in on the Second Amendment. We're going to read them both. Again, they're both pretty short. One is 3 pages, the other is 4 pages. This week, we'll be filing 2 more again, so by next Monday, we'll have 2 more filed. We've been filing an average of 2 a week, so this is number 4 and 5. And then we'll have number 6. We'll go in, this week. I think we're mailing out tomorrow. They'll have it by Thursday. And then some people will have it Wednesday. But we'll be faxing them out on Wednesday. the ones we mail in on Saturday, they will have it by Monday morning. And that should bring us to the place where we really want to be. Next Monday's reading is really where we've been focusing to get to, and we'll be reading that next Monday. We're not going to talk particularly about what it is, but we will post them as soon as it's mailed out, as soon as we've emailed everything out or faxed. We are faxing to quite a few people, as everyone knows, all of the federal all federally elected individuals and all people elected on the state level in every state are receiving copies of these, and they've been made respondents. We've also made the sheriff's respondents, the marshals, the FBI, and the Joint Chief of Staff, Congress, and like I said, everybody on the federal level. Okay, so let's look at this. The first couple of pages are pretty much the same on all of these, so we're not going to read those. We're going to go right to the purpose of the mandamus, which is about martial law. On this one here, which would be mandamus number 4. Martial law. The purpose of this mandamus is to warn all elected and appointed servants concerning their conscious or unconscious participation in a methodical destruction of the ordained government of the United States by we the people, whereas martial law is for the controlling of occupied nations. Martial law is the imposition of the highest-ranking military officer as the military governor or as the head of the government, thus removing all power from the previous executive, legislative, and judicial branches of government in violation of the United States Constitution, Article 4, Section 4, guaranteeing to every state in this union a republican form of government and protection against invasion thereby, an act of war against we the people. All participants of such an act will be tried for treason. Martial law is an extreme and rare measure used to control society during war or periods of civil unrest or chaos. According to the Supreme Court, the term martial law carries no precise meaning. Duncan versus Camaruco. We the people, in order to prevent an overthrow of our government, delegated powers to 3 branches under the Constitution. See Article 1, 2, and 3. Not the military. Nor can delegated powers be elected servants to be legislated or given away to another entity. We the people approved only the following powers defined in our previous writ quo warranto. Legislative powers to 2 houses of Congress, see Article 1. Executive power to the President, see Article 2. The judicial power to the 1 Supreme Court and United States District Courts, see Article 3. Any act to remove power from any state and or federal government of we the people of the United States of America and to give it to the military would be an act of war. 18 U.S. Code 1385, use of Army and Air Force as posse comitatus on American soil is forbidden. in cases necessary to provide for the suppression of insurrection and repel invasions, we the people establish that only Congress can call forth the militia. Article 1, Section 8, Paragraph 15. The Congress shall have the power to provide for calling forth of the militia to execute the laws of the Union, suppress insurrection, and repel invasions. And by the way, every governor can do the same within their state. In order to prevent a military coup, we the people reserve the right to defend ourselves against insurrections and repel invasions. We the people are the militia. Amendment 2, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. As previously stated, the institution of martial law contemplates use of military force and transfers all government authority to the military in which the Constitution, including the Bill of Rights of habeas corpus, would be suspended and is an act of war against the United States of America. Should such a treasonous act occur, we the people order the state legislators and or the governor of every free and sovereign state to act swiftly and call forth the militia through posse comitatus to suppress such a military insurrection and or repel such a foreign troops or repel foreign troop invasion. Any attempt by Congress or the executive branch to use military, foreign, or domestic forces against the people to bring them under martial law is an act of treason, war against the people. We the people will be dependent upon the sheriffs within our counties to secure the peace by any means necessary, seeing that Congress has been negligent in providing for the militia. Therefore, in times of emergency, the only constitutional authority to keep the peace during an invasion or posse comitatus under the Second Amendment, whereas our sheriff is to summons we the people of the counties to secure the peace. Federal agents and foreign troops on state soil would be repugnant to our Constitution and an act of war. Posse comitatus, the power or force of the county, the entire population of the county above the age of 15, which a sheriff may summons to his assistance in certain cases, as to aid him in keeping the peace, in pursuing and arresting felons, etc. Com versus Martin. Alert, considering the troublous preparations listed below by recent United States administrations, we command the states to be on alert against treason. In April 1984, President Reagan signed Presidential Directive No. 54 that allowed FEMA to engage in a secret national readiness exercise under the code name of Rex 84. The plan calls for the suspension of the Constitution, turning control of the government over to FEMA, appointment of military commandments to run state and local governments, and the declaration of martial law. The plan also advocates the rounding up and transfer to assembly centers or relocation camps of at least 21 million Americans in the event of massive rioting or disorder, not unlike the unrounding up of the Jews in Nazi Germany in 1930s. 2. Executive Order 10995, Seizure of All Communications Media in the United States. Executive Order 10997, Seizure of All Electric Power, Fuels and Minerals, Public and Private. Executive Order 10999, Seizure of All Means of Transportation, Including Cars, Trucks, or Vehicles of Any Kind, and total control of the highways, seaports, and waterways. Executive Order 11000, Seizure of all American people for work forces under federal supervision, including the splitting of families if the government finds it necessary. Executive Order 11001, Seizure of all health, education, and welfare facilities, public and private. Executive Order 11002, empowered the Postmaster General to register all men, women, and children in the United States. Executive Order 11003, seizure of all airports and aircrafts. Executive Order 11004, seizure of all housing and finance authorities to establish forced relocations, designated areas to be abandoned as unsafe. Executive Order 11005. And I did forget to mention, you can get a copy of these papers up on, everybody should know this by now because we do this every week the last few weeks. But if you go up to nationallibertyalliance.org, click on media, and you'll come down, you'll see papers filed. All these papers are already up there. Executive Order 11005, seizure of all railroads, inland waterways, and storage facilities, public and private. Executive Order 12919, seizure signed June 3rd, 1994 by President Clinton, encompassing all of the above executive orders. On March 16, 2012, President Obama signed Executive Order 13603, called National Defense Resources Preparedness, which put our nation in a permanent state of martial law that only needs to be activated by the president whenever he should so choose to do so. Wherefore, the Unified Common Law Grand Juries, stewards of the common law, on behalf of the people and in the interest of justice, ordered all participants of this mandamus is to be on guard against tyrants who are anxious to seize upon a national emergency in order to bring in martial law and destroy America. Ordered, President of the United States, United States Congress, United States District Courts, and Supreme Court of the United States shall obey the law of the land, keep their oaths to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution for the United States of America. Fiction of law and executive orders are not the law of the land. All laws, rules, and practices which are repugnant to the Constitution are null and void. Marbury versus Madison. Ordered, all sheriffs in a state of emergency shall perform their sworn duty to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution for the United States of America. Protect the people of the county, private property, and all the assets of the county. As a matter of fact, that was the word county. Let me reread that. Protect the people of the county, private property, and all the assets of the county. The sheriff alone is responsible to maintain law and order in the county and to work with other county sheriffs across the state and across the nation to do the same. If the sheriff permits the suspension of the U.S. Constitution in his county, liberty will be lost forever, and he too then wars against the people. Ordered, news media, under penalty of law, editors are ordered to perform their First Amendment duty and report or print a copy of for the people. Failure to do so, seeing you have a duty to inform, will be considered aiding and abetting the enemy. And this was sealed and dated on May 27, 2015. They have received this already, and it's been faxed out to all of the recipients that we had mentioned earlier. Mandamus number five. This one went out, as I mentioned, I believe on the 28th, 29th. It's dated the 29th. It was received this morning, June 1st, in the mail in all 94 federal district courts. And when all of our elected servants on both state and federal levels came to work this morning, they found their fax machines with these papers on it also. Well, this particular paper here, which is Mandamus number 5, focusing in on the Second Amendment. Okay, Second Amendment, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state and the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. The legislative, judiciary, and administrative powers are defined by seven articles of the United States Constitution, which is understood in light of the Capstone Bill of Rights. Therefore, the United States government have no authority to disarm the people. Any move by any elected or appointed official from any of the three branches of government to disarm we the people is an act of war against the people. We the people order the arrest of said elected or appointed officials immediately. Necessity is the plea for every infringement of human freedom. It is the argument of tyrants. It is the creed of slaves. William Pitt. They that can give up essential liberty to maintain a little temporary safety deserve neither liberty nor safety. Benjamin Franklin. Disarmament in the name of international security. Acts of treason. On September 25, 2013, in an act of war against the unalienable rights of the people protected by Amendment 2 against the will of we the people and without the consent of Congress, Secretary of State John Kerry committed treason by signing the United Nations Arms Trade Treaty, thereby surrendering the people's unalienable rights protected by Second Amendment to foreign powers inapplicable to liberty. On September 24, 2014, while addressing the UN General Assembly concerning the United Nations Arms Trade Treaty, in an act of war against the unalienable rights of the people protected by the Second Amendment, against the will of we the people, President Obama said, "All nations must meet our responsibility to observe and enforce international norms, thereby yielding his oath of office to foreign powers." On December 25, 2014, Christmas Eve, the United Nations Arms Treaty became binding on the nations that have ratified, that is, signed, in our case, by John Kerry. Under fiction of law, the treaty provides the basis for additional gun regulations in America under the guise of necessity. A League of Evil. The following statistics were reported in the September 11, 1999 issue of the Economist magazine, page 7, titled A League of Evil. A. 1915 through 1917. Ottoman Turkey banned gun possessions and then targeted Armenians, mostly Christians, and killed 1 to 1.5 million people. 1929 to 1945. Soviet Union banned gun possession and then targeted political opponents and farming communities, killing 20 million people. 1933 to 1945, Nazi Germany and occupied Europe banned gun possession and then targeted political opponents, Jews, gypsies, and critics, killing 20 million people. 1927 to 1949, Nationalist China banned private ownership of guns and then targeted political opponents, army conscripts, and others, killing 10 million people. 1949 to 1952, 1957 to 1960, 1966 to 1976, Red China instituted death penalties for supplying guns to counter-revolutionary criminals, and anyone resisting any government program, and then targeted political opponents, killing 20 to 35 million people. 1960 to 1981, Guatemala banned gun possessions and then targeted Mayans, other Indians, and political enemies. I think that's Mayans, M-A-Y-A-N-S, Mayans, other Indians and political enemies, killing 100,000 to 200,000 people. 1971 to 1979, Uganda, registered gun owners, instituted warrantless searches, and then targeted Christians and political enemies, killing 300,000 people. 1975 to 1979, Cambodia registered gun owners and then targeted educated persons and political enemies, killing 2 million people. 1994, Rwanda registered gun owners and then targeted the Tutsi people, killing over 800,000 people. Unarmed people have no defense against demonical government. In the 20th century alone, governments killed a total of 262 million civilians. Nobel Peace Prize finalist R.J. Rummel, in an update to statistics originally presented in his death by Government Transaction Publishers, 1994. So that was documented, 262 million people. John R. Bolton, as the United States Undersecretary for Arms Control and International Security, urged the United Nations in 2001 to recognize how an oppressed non-state group defending itself from a genocidal government will need ready access to firearms. Mr. Bolton may have been the first U.S. official in modern history to argue before the UN that private citizens might need to be armed against their own killer governments. Governments murdered four times as many civilians as were killed in all their international domestic wars combined. How could governments kill so many people? The government had the power. The people, the victims, were unable to resist because the victims were unarmed. History clearly teaches that every government that moves towards gun control ends up killing the people who disagree with it. Disarmed people are neither free nor safe. Rather, they become the criminal's prey and the tyrant's playthings. When people are defenseless and the government goes rogue, thousands and millions of innocents die. Why governments disarm people? Both oligarchy and tyrants mistrust the people and therefore deprive them of arms. Aristotle. When the resolution of an enslaved America was formed in Great Britain, the British Parliament was advised by an artful man, Sir William Keith, who was governor of Pennsylvania, to disarm the people, that it was best and most effectual way to enslave them, but that they should not do it openly, but weaken them and let them sink gradually by totally disusing and neglecting the militia. George Mason. Before standing army can rule, the people must be disarmed, as they are in almost every kingdom in Europe. The supreme power in America cannot enforce unjust laws by the sword, because the whole of the people are armed and constitute a force superior to any band of regular troops. Noah Webster. Every communist must grasp this truth. Political power grows out of the barrel of a gun, Mao Zedong. The most foolish mistake we could possibly make would be to permit the conquered Eastern people to have arms. History teaches us that all conquerors who have allowed their subject races to carry arms have prepared their own downfall by doing so. Adolf Hitler. In a radio interview with Walton and Johnson, January 17, 2013, Ron Paul said, "They will come with their guns to take our guns." In 1962, President John F. Kennedy said, "Those who make peaceful revolutions impossible will make violent revolutions inevitable." He went on to say, "Today we need a nation of Minutemen, citizens who are not only prepared to take up arms, but citizens who regard the preservation of freedom as a basic purpose of their daily life, and who are willing to consciously work and sacrifice for that freedom." Wherefore, the unified common law grand juries, stewards of the common law on behalf of the people and in the interest of justice, ordered all county sheriffs, federal agents, FBI, U.S. marshals are to arrest immediately any appointed or elected servant who moves against the people in an act of war to disarm them. Ordered, all sheriffs in an act of emergency shall perform their sworn duty to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution for the United States of America, protect the people of the county, private property, and all the assets of the county. The sheriff alone is responsible to maintain law and order in the county and to work with other county sheriffs across the state and across the nation to do the same. If the sheriff permits the suspension of the U.S. Constitution in his county, then liberty will be lost forever, and he too then wars against the people. Ordered, news media, under the penalty of law, editors are ordered to perform their First Amendment duty and report or print a copy of for the people. Failure to do so, seeing you have a duty to inform, will be considered aiding and abetting the enemy. Okay, and that is the end of the second mandamus. So those two mandamuses went out this past week. And as I mentioned, this last one we just read, they got this morning when they came into work, both by mail in every federal court in the nation and everyone else on their fax machines. The sheriffs received it both by fax and email, so they got two copies from both directions. Okay, so that brings us to the end of that. Before we open up for the mics, just want to make some announcements. We still need more people to fill numerous leadership roles, so please call Jan or Robert. They're the national leadership. You can find them under the directory page on National Liberty Alliance. Just click on directory and you'll find them there. And talk with them about some of them. They'll give you some ideas and thoughts on some of the things we have going and where we need help and wherever you feel you might want to help. We need assistance with all of the committees out there. It's time now to really get the word out. We not only are mailing these things out every 3 or 4 days, actually 2 a week, through the faxes and through the emails and through the U.S. mail. So everybody in America really is getting this, every elected official and every appointed individual, particularly in law enforcement. But also we are sending this out to over 6,000 medias across the nation. So we're hitting local TV stations, local newspapers. We also send everything to the networks. I just recently realized we didn't add the Drudge Report, so we just threw that in this week. I don't know if they got a copy of this yet, but they should be getting a copy of all these things probably within the next week if they didn't get them this time around. But in any event, we've notified everyone. Now is time for the people to really get out there and start working with our media group here on National Liberty Alliance to try to get the word out. We need to contact any news media you can think of. Let them get it from multiple individuals, not only from the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, but also from people across the nation. So send copies of these things. Send people information, and you don't necessarily have to send a copy, but you can tell them where they can get a copy. You might be able to cut out some keywords. I know we're working on a letter right now that we'll be mailing out. It'll be a letter to the people, and it'll also include the sheriffs and ultimately all elected individuals. But it's really going to be focused in on the people and the sheriffs. And I think that letter is going to be one, maybe 2 pages. I think right now it's 2 pages. And once we get that going, people can take that letter and send it to everyone and anyone. I don't know if anybody sent anything to Alex Jones or to Glenn Beck, but we need to send multiple copies to these individuals. And let them know it's their duty also to report. I know that both of them are aware of us, but they're not reporting on us. But now is the time to stand up. Now is the time to unify. Now is the time to get together and do what has to be done and get the word out. There's a couple more papers going out, and we are writing some more, potentially speaking, for the next couple of weeks. But we'll talk again on the next ones going out next week. We still need more funding. If we're going to continue to be filing papers after June 6th, we've been using even our bill note money to get this done, so we're kind of behind on bills, so we still need more money. Also, after June 6th, we're probably going to continue to file some more papers. We've got a couple of ideas. There's a few more papers we want to get out, sort of follow-ups and really kind of push the issue on what we've already sent out. So again, we're going to still continue to need some money. So anybody who hasn't given yet, please consider giving in order to get these faxes out and send these mails out. In stamps alone, it was like almost $700 just to send these last sets of papers out. So it does get quite expensive, and nothing is free. So we need money. there are people, we have a couple hundred people that seem to really carry the weight of most of what we do. But it's time for those who haven't been helping to really stick your hand in your pocket, even if it's only $5. Whatever you could do to get this job done. We're either going to make it or break it right here. This is it. This is the point. We have to push as hard as we can. We've done everything we can to get the word out to everyone we can. But now it's up to every individual with National Liberty Alliance, those either who are members or just following us. And I know we have tens of thousands, perhaps more, maybe hundreds, but we get some really a lot of hits every month on our website. So we easily have tens of thousands of people new each month. And I haven't been following much the numbers lately. I just kind of stopped on that. It kept going, growing, and growing, so I'm sure it's continuing to grow. Let's see. I know, Gerard, if you're here, I don't know if you got anything to announce, or Gary, Robert, if you guys got anything to announce, just pick up your mic and or anything you want to make a point.
Hey, John.
Yeah.
Do we have a hit counter? Do we have a hit counter on the amount of times that the show is archive shows are listened to, or no? This service doesn't do
no,
that.
No, we don't. But I can tell you, I don't know if we can count on these kind of statistics. But when we were on, trying to think of the name of the program we're on, where every
talk
time
to,
someone
one of those, yeah,
talk
yeah.
to, that's what it was. Yes,
yeah.
They actually had a counter every time it was downloaded. And we actually, one-third, two-thirds was the relationship. Two-thirds of the people, one-third, let's say if we had 150 people listening, then we had 300 people downloading. So now some of those, of course, may be repeat downloads and so on. But we got quite a few hundreds of people, usually 300-400 people listening on coming through us here on free conference call. But then we have the radio stations also that are simulcasting us or broadcasting us at a later time. And then, of course, we have the downloads, and we have no idea how many people are downloading. But all in all, the traffic is very, very high on our website. Not long ago, we had to pay and add more broadband, and we also had to add more space. So that tells us we're growing, growing, growing. And, of course, the more people that tune in and read and listen and hit our site and so on, and download things, then the more and more it's going to cost us because it does get rather expensive. So we're hoping that, of course, as we grow that way, we also grow with people who will financially assist us to keep going and to keep that broadband up. If we run out of broadband and we can't afford to pay for any more broadband, what happens is the site actually goes down during the month. And I've seen websites where, you know, the last week of the month, there is no site there. They ran out of broadband, and then the following month they kick back in. I guess they just couldn't afford to pay the bill. Hopefully that's not going to happen to us. Hopefully people believe in what we're doing. Hopefully people understand that this is the only peaceful way to save the nation. We're extremely, extremely close. And I think by next Monday, you're going to realize how close we really are. So, again, we need people's support, not only to get the word out, the support in working with us that way. We also need people to, you know, give us an hour or two or three a week. Some people are retired. They can give us a lot of time. Some people are working, and they can only give us an hour a week. But if you've got 300 people giving us an hour a week, that's 300 hours of our workforce working to do the things we have to get done. And we have a lot to do, a lot to do. And so please volunteer an hour a week or more or whatever time you can. And also, again, you know, donate $5 a month, and also support our, our people that products that we are selling on our website. We got silver lungs to create colloidal silver, and we also have Food Independence. You can go there and purchase long-term food. I think this food goes 20 years. It comes in cans, and it's packaged, and it can last 20 years. Also, silver and gold. People should be getting as much silver. In my opinion, silver coins. That's what I save is silver coins, quarters, dimes, half dollars, silver dollars. Also, we also have Survival Seed Vault. $37.95. They have this one package they sell. You wouldn't believe what they give you in seeds. So people should be buying this stuff and storing it away. And even if you're not planting this year, you have it for the years to come. And so everybody should be, you know, again, getting silver. They should be dealing with their health. Colloidal silver will help you with your health, of course. And seed, of course, food. And then, of course, the storage food. You need all these things. So we've only chosen products that made sense. We are working out something right now. We've got sort of a mock-up website created already for selling things like T-shirts, bumper stickers, and different things like that, caps and banners and so on. And so we're working. Hopefully I'll be talking with these people tomorrow and kind of seal the deal. And we'll have this up on going on our website hopefully this week. Again, I've seen the mock-up site that they put together. It's pretty impressive. I think they're ready to rock and roll and just put a lot of different products on, even if it's just a couple of products in the beginning, and we'll be adding products as we move on. But again, anything we're really involved with we're selling is things that's necessary for the movement, you know, to getting the word out in the movement, of course. That's why T-shirts, caps, and so on. But everything else really is just items that everyone should have, especially in a state of emergency. If you don't have silver and you don't have food and you don't have something to deal with illness like, you know, colloidal silver. Is that the way to pronounce it, colloidal, Gerard? I think it's pronounced
that way. Close enough. Yeah, colloidal, okay. Yeah.
Colloidal. So that's one of the most important things. And, you know, and if we did get into hard times and you got injured or something, you can put colloidal silver on the wound, and it really assists in a very fast healing process, and also cleanses the wound, and so on. So these are things I think everybody really should have. I know I purchase these things from time to time, and keep building up, you know, things that I know we're going to need at some point in time. Again, our hope is that, and I believe we're going to be successful at this, it's going to be a peaceful revolution, so to speak. We're going to win by the power of the pen, the power of the word, and the pressure and the stress upon these elected and appointed individuals is going to be too great for them to get up and try to push their agenda now, to push towards a martial law, to try to come out and take our guns. This game they're playing with Jade Helm, which is a Trojan horse, you know, it's going to be very, very shaky for them to make that move now because everybody's aware. Everybody knows now. You know, I know Gerard sent me something recently this week on numerous people that have been killed, high-ranking officers, some of them, but a lot of news people and scientists particularly. I think it was mostly scientists, wasn't it, Gerard? People working...
it's the whole gamut. Bankers were the latest.
Yeah, a lot
ones.
Of bankers, yeah.
Yeah, and virologists, you know, people that were working on vaccines and just the whole gamut and just turning up dead all over the place. It's crazy. You know, and then they say it's a suicide. The guy shot him eight times in the head. It was a suicide. Unbelievable.
Yep. Anyway, you know, these are very serious times, and we are doing our best to prevent this from becoming ultimately a revolution that's going to cause bloodshed. We want to really solve this really by the power of the pen. And again, I do believe we're going to succeed at that. I think by next week people will agree. Anyway, you got anything, Gerard, before we open up to the mics? Let me ask that. Before we do that, but let me just make a point here. Anybody that hasn't been able to speak in the last couple of weeks or hasn't spoken in the last couple of weeks, they should be the first ones to get into the queue. It's star 6, I think it is, to get into the queue. Is it star 6?
Yeah, star 6 and then 1, I think.
Or vice versa, I don't remember. But yes,
star 6, and then they'll direct you
to hit 1.
There.
Okay, so anybody that hasn't had the opportunity to speak in the past couple of weeks or never spoke before, let those people get into the queue first. Everyone else should wait maybe a minute or two for those people to get in, and then in 2 minutes or so, anybody can get into the queue. But who wanted to talk? Was that you, Robert?
It was me. You know, I don't know whether it had anything to do with what we're doing. I'd like to think that it does, but I'm getting the word that a judge in California just disqualified all 250 prosecutors in one county of Orange for corruption.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you, I think there's a lot going on right now we haven't heard about yet. This paper is pressure. We have not done anything as strong as we've been doing these last couple of weeks, but we have done things in the past, and the pressure that they've put onto some of these judges and some of these people has been tremendous. And now the fact that everyone is getting a copy of this, it's not just the judge, but it's everyone. The clerks are getting it, the judges are getting it, sheriffs are getting it, every elected official, congressmen and senators, assemblymen and state senators, and everybody's getting it. It's like, did you get? Yeah, I got that paper. You know, did you get? Everybody's talking. The phones have got to be ringing off the hook. It's got to be, because we're revealing something that a lot of these people know. Look, you have the people that are in on it, okay, and that I think is probably the minimum, but nevertheless, there's quite a few people that are in on the game. To take out America. Then you have the useful idiots, which is most of them. Okay, they just haven't got a clue. They're totally lost in their power and struggle for money and so on. And then you have those who are frustrated that know what's going on and they're unable to do anything. They've been threatened. Their lives have been threatened. But you see, now the people are speaking up. Now it's going out into the news. Now it's getting everywhere. Now it's been registered. It has been filed in every court. It has been served on every elected individual, and it's starting to really start to snowball, to move. Now is the time for people to stand up together and do it, because yeah, they can take out one person here and a person there. You know, I read over the weekend about a news guy that they took out. You know, committed suicide. I think he jumped out a window or something. I don't recall particularly. Gerard, if you have any specifics on that and you want to expound. But anyway, this news guy seems they're going to be blowing a whistle on it. They took him out. So, you know, we're kind of lost and separated. And we're not communicating. We're not organized. Well, now, what we are doing, we are communicating. We are organizing. We are laying out what people need to do when certain things happen, what they need to do. We're explaining to them what their duties are. Sheriffs, if they're reading the papers, should now be able to recognize when judges are breaking the law. And judges should be worried about violating someone's unalienable rights by taking them into a foreign jurisdiction or imprisoning them with no authority or no jurisdiction and so on, because sheriffs are starting to understand. There may be one here and one there, but it's just a matter of reading. And we're about ready to do a letter to the sheriff. We're going to fax out an email, a very short letter, maybe one or two pages, especially just for the sheriff. I know one of our groups are working on that letter. And that letter will go out and kind of, you know, give them a summary of what all these papers are and how important it is that if they haven't read it, that they need to read this, that we have some serious problems in America and only they can fix it. But they can only fix it if they understand their power and their authority. They can only fix it if they're going to step up and do their job and protect the Constitution, the people, particularly protect the people from their unalienable rights being violated that is protected by that Constitution. They need to understand, you know, what their title is. They're constitutional officers. That's what they are. Their job is to protect and defend the Constitution, and that therefore the people, their unalienable rights. And so we're getting that job done. And this is what we've been working for 2 years to get to this point. A lot of people have been pushing us into different directions, trying us to get us to do this and to do that and to do the other thing. And they were impatient. We tried to tell them, hey, we got a plan, but just work with us. And, you know, we're going to get to these points. You know, we first have to set forth principles. And we can never put expedience over principles. When the choice comes to do the expedient thing or the principle thing, well, it's a no-brainer. You do the principle thing. Now, people will argue, not looking at the principle thing and not realizing how important the principles are, and saying, it's expedient, we could do it now, let's do it. No, no. We have to do it the right way. We cannot violate our own principles. Or shall I say, we cannot violate God's principles. Because if he be for us, who can be against us? So we have to do it the principle way. We have to do it the just way. And so a lot of people, what we're doing right now in the courts is what people were trying to get us to do a year or 2 years ago. But it had no power 2 years ago or even a year ago. It had no strength. It had no bite. It had no people behind it. We weren't organized enough. We weren't communicating enough. Today we are organized across the entire nation. Okay, we're working on trying to really work down into the counties, and that's going to take some time. But I think once the floodgates open up, it's going to happen very quickly. People are going to fill positions very quickly. But we are organized nationally. We are organized in every single state of the union. We have organized all 50 states. And reinstated the common law grand juries in every county of the nation. We've done that. And we've created the unified United States common law grand jury, and we, the people, are speaking with one voice and one power, one authority. And it's the message of our founding fathers. It's the message of common law equal to, or natural law. They're synonymous. It's the message of common law. It's the message of justice in our courts, justice in America, and that's the message. And I know everyone that is connected with National Liberty Alliance and seeing these things that they as they unfold, agree with the positions and the words, and the positions that we're taking in the courtrooms. And we're not pulling any punches. We're not pussyfooting around at all. We're going right for the jugular. And we have some real, real serious papers coming up in the next week and two. Not just the next week. The next week is really going to be knockout punches. But the week after that we're going to be doing some heavy things. And I think we'll be positioned for that. Also, I wanted to make a point. We're ready to move on the CPS. I want to talk with Gina. I haven't talked with her particularly yet. I would like to say that maybe by next Monday, it's going to be anybody whose papers we have not gotten, that is affidavits, in order to get into the program for the CPS lawsuit that we're doing. Anybody whose affidavits are not in by next Monday will be set aside, and they'll have to wait another month. And every month we'll add more people, but they're going to have to wait. I haven't confided and discussed this with Gina, who is the director of the CPS lawsuit program that we got going there. I want to get her input, and maybe it'll be 2 weeks, or maybe it'll be 8 days or 10 days. I don't know. But I'm just generally saying I think in a week. I know that kind of thinking is also with them also. We got to get it moving. But we will, like I said, we will add. Every month, we will add all the new people that get into affidavits and keep adding. But that is a move we need to take for numerous reasons. People have been suffering, not seeing their children. Some people's children have already been, they've lost their children. They've been adopted. That's the word I'm looking for, adopted. Some people's children have already been adopted. And the cases are sealed. We're going to unopen that. We're going to open those cases. We're going to unseal those cases. We want to get these people's children back. And we're going to start putting the pressure on these family courts. We're going to start exposing. So we have people working on this day and night here on National Liberty Alliance. We have a lot of people working in this part of the program. I got to say 50, 60, maybe more people working on this part of the program. And we're going to be hitting it real hard across America. And that also is going to really start to push things. We also have a situation with Steve out in Utah, which I'm not going to talk about this week in detail, but maybe next week I'll talk about it in detail. But the judge has done the unthinkable. Steve's lawyer has filed a motion in the court to strike a habeas corpus. Now, a habeas corpus is not just a writ. It is a judicial process. It's a judicial process in the United States since its inception. It was a judicial process when we were colonies. It was a judicial process in Britain since England since 1215. And probably before that, actually 1500, I think, is when it really took its big weight to push forward. So let's say the 1500s. So it's been a judicial process. In the history of habeas corpus, that judicial process has never been stopped successfully, ever, never. The idea or the thought of making a motion to strike a habeas corpus is insane. And he did it for his own client. They had already defaulted. He was out of jail. He should have been released, and he wasn't. So that's a crime, and we're going after that lawyer as it being a crime. But there was a handshake between the lawyer and the judge. And so he made the motion, and the judge accepted it. And we've got a copy of the papers, of all the papers that have been filed. We have a copy of that, and the habeas corpus was filed in that. It's called the docket. And they struck it right out of the docket. So we've already written most of the papers. I'm just waiting for an affidavit to come in from an individual. And then we're going to be filing papers. We're going to overrule the court, give them a writ of error. We're going to send them a mandamus and demand them to give account by what authority. And we're going to find them in contempt of court. And we're going to push for an indictment. Now, we've already agreed a while ago, last time we met, to talk about indictments. Correct me if I'm wrong on this, Gerard, or anybody else, if you remember. We may just call it together anyway, just to reaffirm. It was agreed that anyone who violates these things, an indictment would be just, it would be at our, when, if we felt comfortable with going forward with an indictment, we'd go forward with it. We have not done a federal indictment yet, but we are about to do it. So I think maybe we will call a special meeting coming up this week, hopefully, or next week at the worst case. But I think this week, people should pay attention to the email. We're to call one evening at 9 p.m., to come together in order to vote for an indictment. And it's going to be sort of generic. Anybody who violates particular laws, will list out the particular laws. And for instance, what these people have just done, which has never been done in the history of our judicial process, ever. I mean, these people are just totally making it up. We have a lot to say about this judge, and we'll talk about him next week after we write the papers. Matter of fact, we'll try to read the papers next week. We have a lot going on next week, but we will try to cover this and get into the details of exactly what this judge did, who he was, who he is, what he did, and what he was told before he did it, and yet he still did it. So these people, in my opinion, deserve an indictment, and again, we're going to leave it up to the people to make that decision, and we will put that out as soon as we know when we're going to do that. But again, it will be, I think, this week. Anything else, Gerard? Or anybody else before we open the mics up? Nobody's got anything. Good? Okay. All right, let's open up the mics. Take our first caller, a wireless caller, 229 number. 239 is the area code. Go right ahead. You get the mic. 239-229, wireless caller. You've got the mic. You've been unmuted. You can talk unless you've muted yourself on your side, on your phone. Last call for wireless caller. Don. Yes.
Mute, unmute. Star 6. Can you hear me now?
We can hear you.
All right. This is Bob in Charlotte County, Florida.
How you doing, Bob?
It's been a long time. I spoke to you once before, but it's been several months.
Mm-hmm.
I want to. You just hit on something I want to start out. I'll read this to you real quick, and I know you're familiar with it. It's by George Washington, a quote. The power of the Constitution will always be in the people. It is entrusted for certain defined purposes and for a certain limited period to representatives of their own choosing. And whenever it is executed contrary to their interests or not agreeable to their wishes, their servants can and undoubtedly will be recalled. Have we got a committee to recall our elected officials yet?
Well, what we're going to be doing, and we got a lot of work to do, and we have to stay on point and stay focused. And some things going to fall upon the, you know, along the wayside for a while, but we will remember and we will come back and deal with this. But yeah, we do have a process of removing these people, and we're not going to remove them by recalling them because we can recall. But that goes through committee man process and getting papers and signatures and so on and so forth. We have a quicker way of recalling them. A quicker way of recalling them is very simple. We indict them. Once they're indicted, they're out of office. That's it. They're gone. There's now a vacant seat. They cannot continue in office. They're in bad behavior. They're removed from office, and they'll be going to court. So we will be doing that. Now, again, we've got the olive branch out here. We are not interested in revenge. We're not interested in putting everyone in jail. We're not interested in taking everyone out of office. Look, we're just saying to them, work with us now. Let's save the nation. And we'll let bygones be bygones. But bear in mind, you know, there are people who have been injured by a lot of these people. And when they come to the grand jury and look for restitution, we indeed have to give it to them. We're not going to promise them that we're going to ignore complaints coming against these people. But we're definitely not going to chase after individuals who have been our enemies but now decide, well, you know, I've been doing the wrong thing. I want to change my ways and I want to do the right thing. Even if it's doing it because they want to save their neck, that's fine. We're good
right.
with that. We're
I'm
not
with
here
you.
For revenge.
I'm with you on that 100%. Because I was going to elaborate a little further saying that it was going to be nothing more than a bunch of smoke and mirrors anyway.
Right.
But once they knew there was a recall committee out there doing something, that's all it's going to do. It's going to smoke up and cloud up things. It's going to get them a little bit hyper.
Right.
Even though that it has to go through the ouch petition. Ouch. Sorry, hold on a minute. Oh, I
can
get
these
cramps.
Oh. Yeah, I've been getting some bad cramps lately, too. I know exactly what you're
saying. Leg cramp here. All right. Oh, boy. I'm missing out on some salt.
I don't know why. I've got a couple of those this past week or two, and it's down on the bottom muscle. I forget what they call the leg muscle. And you have to push the toes down to get a lot. Well, let me see. Up? Yeah, down. You got to push the toes down and the heel up, I think, to get rid of it.
I'm in Southwest Florida here, and I work outside all day long. And if I don't get enough salt with my water, I'll cramp up in the evening. But let's move on. Next subject here I got real quick, the militias. There's one started down here in Charlotte County. It's been several months old already.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got an interesting mission statement here, if I've got a minute or two to read it to you.
Sure.
Or I can fax it to you.
Do both, but go ahead. How long is it?
It's one page.
Well, I could probably go through it in about two, three minutes. Just give us some highlighted areas and then give me a copy. I'd love to see a copy, but just give us some highlighted points on it, maybe.
Well, okay, yeah. Let's go through... The fifth paragraph here, for instance, see, we've got a different statute down here that says the militia is everybody in the state. But I point out a couple of things.
That's what the Constitution says, by the way. But go ahead.
Right. Well, the Constitution, in Article 1, Section 8, in Clause 15 and 16, I'm going to mention those two right now real quick. This is something that I pulled up and I figured out that, see, most people that I've kind of confronted down here in Florida that want to join a militia, they're afraid. They're afraid that a militia is worse than joining something like Oath Keepers, okay? But Oath Keepers is something like the Branch Davidian. And they were attacked and killed. And I've been in contact with Sheriff Mack in reference to that, and there are 10 rules and all that. But let me just read you these two in Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution of the United States, Clause 15 and 16, the Congress shall have the power to provide for calling forth the militia to execute the laws of the Union, suppress insurrection, and repel invasions. Now, my quote, did our founders make a small mistake by leaving out the word and after for in that sentence above? That's my question. If not, could they have admitted?
What article you were reading? You were reading Article 1, Section 8, I
think? Article 1, Section 8, Clause 15.
15, okay, yeah. To provide for the calling forth of militia to execute the laws of the Union, suppress insurrection, and repel invasions. What do you think they might have left out?
I think they might have left out and after for.
Okay, let's see. And after for. Provide for
and calling forth militia. Okay.
Yeah, I don't think it's needed. I think it's understood. And also governors, you know, when you get down into the state constitutions and you get into, you know, history and so on and so forth, governors have the ability to call forth the militia within their own state. And and in the states that don't have militia, that's why we're turning to the sheriff, because they have posse comitatus. And look, most of us are all ready. We got guns. We got ammo. We're ready to do whatever has to be done if we're called. Okay.
Well, I'm trying to call up a county militia. First of all, I'm concerned about my county. When Charlie came across and wiped us out.
Here's the key thing, and I think we wrote it up in one of our papers. It may be a paper we haven't read yet, but basically here's the key things. In the case of an assault, and it becomes a sort of a military assault upon the people, if the actual militia or the special forces involved in that might be in a particular county, and those people that have military background, military training, they are to take the lead, and the sheriff is kind of to step aside to allow them to take the lead on the military strikes. But as far as once the county is secured, okay, it's all the sheriff. Sheriff is in charge, not the military, not the militia. No, the sheriff is in charge of his county. He's the guy that knows what's going on. He's the guy who understands the assets of the county. He's the guy that wants to work next door with the next county sheriff to make sure that they're trading and doing the necessary things to keep each other alive and going, so to speak, in a state of an emergency. And we kind of laid all this stuff out. But there has to be a handshake between the militia, where there is a militia in states, and the sheriffs. Now, there's a lot of places
That's exactly what I'm working on right here in Charlotte County.
But there is a lot of places where there's no militia at all, okay? And so, therefore, the sheriff, it's all on the sheriff with the posse comitatus. Now, he may, you know, there's special force people all around the United States, people who have come out of the service, retired from the service, finished their tours, or whatever the case may be. They need to identify themselves to the sheriff, and they should be people in charge of, if a military strike comes upon the people of that county, the sheriff has to recognize the fact that they have the expertise to take the lead on that. We're trying to explain that to them, to the sheriff. And so this is why we've written all these mandamuses and why we writ the quo warranto, is to prepare for this emergency, because we know it's coming down. Being prepared will probably prevent it, and that's the key to what we're doing, is trying to prevent the bloodshed, because these people just aren't going to stop. They're hell-bent on bringing the people into subjection through martial law. They're hell bent in removing our arms, taking our guns and our ammo from us, and even our food and everything. They want to take everything and have total control of everything. Okay, they're hell bent on that. But what we're doing, I believe, is going to prevent them. And I think a lot of people already know that Jade Helm has been moved up from July to June. We just entered June. We are catching this by the skin of our teeth, so to speak. We're just one step ahead of them. And I was hoping to have a month's time between the time we get to a certain point in our paperwork and the time that Jade Helm would be implemented.
I'm behind you 100%. My last hand-delivered paper to my sheriff's secretary, I know her very well. She's been in there for 30 years. I was a deputy sheriff with that office for 7.5 years.
You were
I know her very
sheriff?
Well. she accepted the paper, and I asked her if she knew anything about National Liberty Alliance and if she was receiving papers from them. And she gave me a funny look and says, oh, yeah.
Good.
She says, oh, yeah. And, of course, that was one of your papers that I gave to them. That was the one, the 8-page one, letter to the sheriff. Mm-hmm. Okay? And what I did with that, I wrote him a letter, and I also, in that letter, I included your mandamus on May 20th, and I asked him under lines 710 and 715 of that writ mandamus if he could possibly help us in establishing a grand jury room in the county courthouse via the court administrator or the courthouse administrator. I'm currently waiting on that letter today, and it's been dated the 26th of May.
Well, you know, one of the things you might want to mention to him when you talk with him, and it may make him feel a little more comfortable until he really gets to understand who and what we are, and not only by what authority we talk, but also what principles we're coming with, senses of honor, justice, and mercy. But he needs to understand that if he feels a little, you know, uneasy about calling us to pull forth a grand jury, we also let him know in that paperwork that he has the power and the authority, and it's in history for the longest time. The sheriff can call the grand jury at any given time. He can just pick people right out and say, hey, you, and pull them together as a grand jury, and it's done. He does not have to go begging the prosecutor or the judge or the courthouse. He could do it himself. He could just pick a bunch of people, give a call to the courthouse, say, hey, I'm bringing some people down. I'm going to use the courthouse. We're talking with the grand jury. Just want to let you know, is that conference room available? And he's going to come down and take care of business and do whatever, bring before the grand jury looking for an indictment and, see what the will of the people is and what his concerns are and get some indictments if possible without having to go and beg the fox. So he can do that without us if he wants.
Unfortunately, I think he's being, he's like our president. He's just a puppet on a string for somebody else.
Yeah, well, a lot of these guys are scared. They don't know what the law is. They don't know what to do. We're hoping that putting our paperwork the way we are, writing it the way we are, giving orders the way we are, letting them know if this happens, you do that. If that happens, you do this. All that kind of stuff, it sort of sets the stage. And if they're a little leery about making that step now, when the hard time comes and some really serious things start to happen in America, he's going to remember the paperwork, and he's going to remember what to do, and he's going to do what has to be done. At least we hope he will. I think a large enough percentage of them will. And remember, look, we don't need everybody reading our papers. We don't need everybody understanding our papers. Reading our papers, anybody who reads the papers should understand the papers. This is not difficult language. We're speaking in plain language. We're speaking, you know, we're not playing, with these legal terms and all these hidden things. We're just saying it the way it is. And so anybody who reads this really should understand it. But the key thing is this. If we get 20%, if we get 10%, if we get 5%, I'll live with 5%. If we get 5% of the elected individuals that read this paper, understand it, and realize it, and run with it, you're going to pull the other 95 right behind. Especially when the emergency comes. Huh?
Right. I figured maybe 3%. But yeah, you got 5%, that'd be great. I just wanted to point out one more thing in Clause 16 of, Clause 16 of that, Article 1, Section 8, real quick. And it's the capital letter on part in the middle of the sentence. It annotates that the capital P in part is to emphasize that it is a fraction. That means that a fraction of the state militia can be called to active duty by Congress, thus leaving the remaining reserve to the respective states. This means that each state is responsible to create and supply its own state and its /or county militias. Right. And, of course, that's in the Second Amendment also. It states it right there that the state's responsible. Right. I've also sent a letter to our governor, and I've got a copy of it here, too, Governor Scott, requesting that he support the Charlotte County, Florida Militia, CCFM, which has been started several months in the past. And it'd be interesting to see what kind of response we'll get out of him for that. seeing that Congress is not going to do anything about anything, but the state is responsible for it.
Hopefully Congress is going to start doing something. Right now it's too late for them to do anything for this emergency. That's why with the militias that are already in play, okay, and the sheriff's understanding, posse comitatus, that's how we're going to protect this nation. Also, there is many, I think we're looking at hundreds of high-ranking officers in armed forces that have been dismissed over the past few years. They're still in play with us because, look, at they know why they were dismissed. They understand what's going on. And if they when they see what we're doing and what all the groups, the different liberty groups connecting and the sheriffs and everybody connecting up to do what has to be done, they will volunteer their experience and their position in whatever state they live in to let them know, hey, look, at you know, I can take care of this, that, or the other thing or when it comes to the military force. And you've got the special forces out there that have been ordered to train the people in an emergency. So we have a lot of this stuff out there already going. We have a lot of veterans. Goodness, most of us are made up. We got a lot of Vietnam veterans, and we have other wars all the way up till today, veterans involved with us. But a lot of the people here with National Liberty Alliance and building a lot of this are veterans.
I agree. You know, so, I'm one of them.
So we know what has to be done. Yeah, myself included. We know what has to be done, and we're going to do it.
Oh, by the way, don't worry about Alex Jones being contacted. He's quite well aware of the National Liberty Alliance. I watch his program every day, and he uses information from you, even though he does not expound about where he gets that information from. Mm-hmm. But he talks about several different ways, actually the majority way, the only way that we can take this country back. And if you listen to his news reports, it's in there. It's a little bit in there all the time. It's about
news.
The Constitution
see,
and taking back this country that way.
That's good news. I'm glad you told me that because I do know that he's got to be real careful. And at some point, as long as he knows about us, he'll know when the right time is to start pushing us. And that time is coming very soon. And I think the same is true about Glenn Beck and others. They'll know when the time is right to do it. Because, look, there's a point of no return. There's a point to do or die. And when we come to that point, do or die, we're all going to know it. And we're all going to do or we're going to die. And that'll be that.
You know,
we're going to do it.
You know a lot of senators and congressmen are infighting right now, and they're turning each other in, right?
Well, I certainly hope so. We've been sending them our papers, so they're getting it too.
Yeah, they're turning each other's in. That's why we've got 9 Republicans already running for president.
Yeah, that's amazing.
I mean, come on. When I ran for sheriff in '96 in Charlotte County, there was 7 of us total running for the position.
Well, you mentioned I think that you were a deputy sheriff, right?
Right, and at the time in '96 I ran for sheriff. Of course, I had to lose my position because I had to resign.
We need people who have that kind of background, particularly sheriff or deputy sheriffs, to work with us and get a sheriff's committee going. And so,
I've already completed your test, John. I've already sent in my oath. That's the 4th oath I've ever made in my life.
Well, if you are interested in working with us, we have a committee set up, and we'd like to get to something going with working with sheriffs across America. And if we can get ex-sheriffs or even sheriffs or deputy sheriffs, anybody that has that experience as the head of this committee, that's what we need. So if you're interested in that, get a hold of Jan or Robert on our directory page. They're the national leaders for National Liberty Alliance. Get a hold of them, and they'll work with you and cook you up with a whole bunch of other people. We have some real serious people working on some real serious work. And everyone should get involved. Get involved here. Let's step up and do it because now is the time. This is the time to save America. This is the month. June 2015 is going to be the decision on whether we are going to save America without blood or it's going to end up a bloodbath. But I truly believe we're going to be able to prevent that from happening.
I think we
have them on the run. We have them on the run.
We do. You do. We do. We all do, yes, because
absolutely.
I see it now. Because I've got several letters, like I said, written by that sheriff already, and it's like I'm getting the same response you're getting.
Mm-hmm.
And all it's going to do is putting them on a fence. They're going to have to go one way or the other pretty soon.
Right.
They're going to have to
push them off that fence.
Or they get pushed off, right.
Yep.
Now, one more thing I wanted to ask you. Well, never mind. I think I'm way ahead of you on this anyway. This is the only next step you can do coming up is going to be, indictments.
Yes, we're working on that position right now. And believe
How about subpoenas for depositions on some of the things that we might want to question them about, like where they stand on this and on that?
For instance,
Jade Helm.
We have so many things we're going to be able to chase them for without doing the subpoenas and depositions. You know, they'll try to really, stonewall us as long as they can on that. We're not going to allow them the opportunity to stonewall us on anything. We're going to steamroll them just like they've been steamrolling us, but we're going to steamroll them in the name of justice. And so we have so much that we can do on that end that we don't need to go and try to question them and have them answer and let them play their legal lawyer games. We're not going to give them that opportunity. And by the way, court is in session. Indictments are being prepared and presumed and found on the papers that we are filing by the action that these people are taking, by the things that they are doing. Okay? So we are about ready to do some big things on that level. Also, we have other habeas corpus is going out. I believe I can say this. I don't know if Greg is here. I'm pretty sure I could say this, that we've been talking with Terry down in Florida, and I believe we have all his paperwork now. We're going to be doing a habeas corpus to get him out of his situation down there. I'm sure you might be familiar what's going on down there with him.
I am somewhat, but I'm just vaguely, actually last Monday call that I heard a couple days later expounded on it, and that's the last I heard about his situation.
Yeah, so we're going in to deal with a lot of habeas corpuses. He's going to be one of them. We also have Commander Walt. We're going to go in and get him out of jail and do a habeas corpus for him. Plus, with the CPS, that's why we want to move on it now. Now is the time to push the button on the CPS lawsuit and start filing papers to bring down the family court debacle, because that's RICO on steroids right there. That's probably the worst, is the family court system. So, but anyway.
I agree.
Anyway, anything final? Because we have to move on. You've been on quite some time, but you had a lot of
questions. No, John. If I can, I'll email you all this stuff. It'll be in an attachment in my email address.
If you email it today or tomorrow morning, I should. You know, I'll keep an eye out for it.
More than likely tomorrow morning I'll email it.
Okay, that'll be good. If you can give us your time working with a committee, and we're looking for other sheriffs or deputy sheriffs to work on this committee to really, spearhead the committee, trying to pull the sheriffs together to get them educated and so on and so forth.
I'll do what I can. And that's one of the things I've been talking to people down here about, getting in there and talking to my sheriff, which him and I used to pull up car to car all the time and speak about things, especially after I got back from the Gulf War. We'd up side by side, and we'd sit there and talk for 10, 15, 20 minutes, and I know the guy very, very well.
All right, well, that's a beginning, you see, right there. And so to talk with Jan or Robert on the National Leaders here, on you'll find them on the directory on National Leaders.
I'll give them a call tomorrow.
And let's do what we can do. Let's try to find other sheriffs and deputy sheriffs, ex or actually serving, whatever. Let's just get them together. You know, we're also looking to do something with the Oath Keepers, to pull the Oath Keepers together. We'd like to get a committee going with them. So we'd like to get Oath Keepers, active Oath Keepers that are National Liberty Alliance members, to work on that committee and start reeling in the Oath Takers, the Oath Keepers, I mean. So, all right, what was your first name again?
Right, first name. Bob.
Bob. Okay, Bob. Good talking with you, and to you again soon. Thank you.
I will.
Okay, our next caller, Carl. Go right ahead, Carl, with a K. K-A-R-L. 715.
Hi, John. This is Carl from Wisconsin.
How you doing,
you
Carl?
Were just talking. Hey, pretty good, John. Good to hear from you again, as always. I just wanted to talk about, just real quickly, militias. I just wanted to read this to you. This is 10 U.S. Code, Statute 311, Militia, Composition and Classes. A, the militia of the United States consists of all able-bodied males at least 17 years of age and, except as provided in Section 313 of Title 32 under 45 years of age who are or who have made a declaration of intent to become citizens of the United States and of female citizens of the United States. B. The classes of militia are 1. The organized militia, which consists of the National Guard and Naval Militia, and 2. The unorganized militia, which consists of the members of the militia who are not members of the National Guard or the Naval Militia. So this is actual 10 U.S. Code Statute 311. So the militia...
U.S.C. 10, and what subsection?
Statute 311.
311. Okay, so right, U.S.C. So 10, subsection 311.
Yeah, it's 10 U.S. Code Statute 311.
Okay, I got it. Definitely. I'm going to take a look at that, and I might use that in some paperwork coming up. That's good.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, the other thing is I just wanted to just touch on this just briefly. I want to talk about, you know, one of the things that bothered me and one of the reasons why I am involved in the National Liberty Alliance and the Unified Grand Juries and the Unified Grand Jury of Wisconsin and our county here is because it's plain to see in the news to me. I see it personally. I see it, obviously, that our what they call a grand jury today is being manipulated and controlled by the district attorney, and I think even some in some cases even a judge. And they're indicting ham sandwiches, people, innocent people who shouldn't be indicted. And people like cops and government officials are getting away with murder. And so what I wanted to have you do is talk to the secrecy, you know, the secrecy section of the grand jury, of the common law grand jury, and how, you know, the grand juries that we're speaking of would not be tainted, you know, by state or district attorneys and
exactly.
And
well,
judge.
Well, that's the problem. When look at, they started to really destroy the juries when the judges and the prosecutors started to control them. You know, in the past, it was usually the sheriff. A prosecutor can call the grand jury, but any sheriff could call the grand jury. But they've been dumbing down sheriffs for a long, long time, and they've been removing the authority and the control and the process, and they just forgot all about it now. They don't know it. They just don't know. They can call a grand jury. They can literally go house to house and pick people to come down to be the grand jury. If they wanted to do it that way, they'd get on the phone and have people come down. They just pull a grand jury together. And but they don't know it anymore. Now, they have, and we have a copy of this, the federal questionnaire, which I don't think we posted, but I will try to get it up and post it maybe. There's a federal questionnaire, and I went through it. It's amazing, unbelievable, the questions they ask. They ask them what channels do they watch. They ask them if they're Republicans or Democrats, what news do they watch, Fox, do they watch CNN. They ask them all these insane questions. It's clearly a psychological profile that they're doing on all of these individuals. And all of that is a violation. Look at you pull a grand jury out of a hat, out of a pool. Period. You get 25 people, or if it's a trial jury, you know, you get the 12 plus the two spare wheels, so you get 14. But either way, you just pull them out of a pool. Now you make some certain points. Anybody that in this situation or that situation concerning the case, you know, if they know the people or something like that, then they need to pull themselves off the grand jury. But for lawyers or judges or anyone to quiz a jurist in order to discover whether they want these people to sit on this jury or not, that's called jury tampering. Now, if a lawyer on the other side says, wait a second, this guy knows this person here who's connected to that, and they can't judge on this case, well, that's a good point. Then you have to remove that person. But other than that, you get what you get. You pull them out of a pool, and you live with what you got. You know, whether it's a male or a female, black, white, pink, or green, it doesn't matter. You get what you get. Those are the people that sit on the grand jury. Now, we the people, we have to be the administrators of that. That's why we're setting up administrations across the nation in every single county. Four administrators in each county, which becomes the investigative body for the grand jury. We also get to orientate the grand jury and the trial juries. We give them the principles. We get one day to spend with them. And what are we going to do with them for that one day? We're going to talk about principles, justice, honor, and mercy. We're going to talk about their duty, what it is they need to do. We're going to talk about the Constitution. We're going to talk about restitution. We're going to talk about, they get to decide everything. If you think the person should be incarcerated, fine. The key thing is really restoring the injured party. That's the key thing. But if you think there should be a jail sentence to that, or maybe a person should be in jail and get out 8 hours a day to go to work so that they can pay restitution, whatever they want, they can be creative in any way they want to do it to fix the problem, because that's their job. You can work the grand jury to make an arrangement between the parties, and or they can make the indictment, and then the trial jury will make the decision at the end of the trial what they're going to do. And that'll be that. They get, if they want to have the death penalty for a situation, that's their prerogative, and nobody can change it. That's the power of the people, and you can trust the people.
Yeah. John, I just have a question for you in regard to history of the common law grand jury. I wanted to read up more on that. I studied the common law grand juries back in the middle 2000s, and I did a report on it on one of my blogs. And I don't recall all of it, and I can't seem to find some of the information that I had available back then. The common law grand jury, the secrecy factor, which makes the grand jury a good place to try or to investigate our elected public officials, for example, or maybe there's a bad cop. Okay, who does something bad? Okay, and as we know, there are such things. But it seems altogether too common that, for example, bad cops are getting away with some really bad stuff. Sometimes I think even murder. I mean,
we know of cases, and we're going to be going back on cases, and we're going to be doing indictments. And it's not just us, anything I know, but look at people who live in whatever county they're living in, and they're aware of cases that have taken place a year, two, 3 years ago where these cops were not indicted and they should have been. They can revisit that at any time, and I encourage them to consider doing those things. We're going to go back and get these murderers, and we're going to put them in jail.
Okay, but my question specifically is, it seems to me that when the district attorney or the so-called prosecutor is presenting his materials to the common law grand jury, well, it's not the common law grand jury.
Well, to the puppet grand jury, yes.
The puppet. Yeah, whatever you want to call it.
Or you can call it statutory.
Okay. It seems to me, in my opinion, from what I've been reading and studying just recently, it seems to me that these people are purposely tainting the jury, either to indict, a ham sandwich, meaning an innocent American who, just really isn't either involved or really isn't, guilty and who should be, should be released, or they get a cop or three in front of them or whatever, or they're investigating a cop, not in front of them, but they're investigating two or three cops, let's just say. And the prosecutor is just setting it up that these cops are just plain getting off, period, getting off. I don't mean to just be picking on cops. It could be several different kinds of cases. I'm just picking out a case that highlights my point here.
Well, okay. bear in mind, we're talking about code enforcement officers. We're talking about cops. We're not talking about sheriffs and deputies.
Right.
We're talking about a whole different thing. Because the people that are involved with all of these, police brutality and stuff are actual cops. They're not, very rarely are they coming from the sheriff's department. And all of these police departments are unconstitutional. They're code enforcement lawyers, and I don't participate in code with the code with their codes. It has nothing to do with me. I don't want any part of it. Don't give me any of your stupid tickets. Now, of course, they do from time to time, and I have to be reasonable. I have to pick my own battles, and I may pay the fine just to get out because I haven't got time. But I have a list, and I'm going back later.
Okay. Okay, but how are we going to use the system that we're setting the foundation for to prevent these district attorneys and these state attorneys, what you want to call them, prosecutors, from tainting our common law grand juries. How are we doing?
Because they don't get to talk to them, and if they do, look at, if a prosecutor has a case for the government, okay? If a prosecutor has a case for the government, they're welcome to come in and bring their case before the grand jury. But believe me, when they're in there with that grand jury, one of the administrators will be sitting right there to make sure that they don't get abused, okay? Because the moment they step out of line and they try to taint that grand jury, or the, you know, by taking them and do jury, you know, ultimately just tainting the jury, you know, jury tampering, okay?
Right.
We'll have them arrested immediately. And look at...
Yep.
Just think about this, okay? We don't have to worry about shutting all these things down. They'll shut themselves down because town courts, village courts, city courts, unless, like in New York State, they call the New York City courts courts of record. It's actually in our Constitution, so that's a legal court. But other than that city court in New York, there is no legal city court. All those courts are courts not of record. They operate under equity. Well, not under equity, under chancery. They hide under equity, but they're operating under chancery. They have nothing to do with law and order. They're illegal. They're unconstitutional. And they are sandbagging and the people and actually hijacking them people into the common, into a foreign court, foreign to common law courts, of course. And once we get into power and authority, we're going to read the Riot Act to these judges. When you want to send your code enforcement officers out there and you go after people and do all these illegal things, when these people come before your bench, you know, you can tell them whatever you want, but you better let them know that they have the opportunity of not participating and walking right out that door, and we'll just cut your records up because we can't do anything. They're going to shut themselves down. Okay?
Right. For everybody listening on the line, when you're saying code enforcement, just to help other people who might not know what you're speaking about, I believe what you're referring to is, for example, we have the right, as long as we're not operating a motor vehicle for commercial purposes, we have the God-given individual right to travel on the roads by any means of convenience that we fit, okay? And they are using their traffic code laws in order to pounce upon us with taxation without representation by the gun in his hand. And what does he do but write out a ticket, okay? And that is nothing more than taxation without representation, void of law, okay? And that, when you're talking about code enforcers, you're talking about people running around with suits on and issuing all sorts of citations for things that are wholly repugnant to the Constitution. Is that not right? Is that what you're
talking
about?
That's absolutely correct. You know, and nobody has to answer to any of those things. The Fifth Amendment makes it clear without an indictment by a grand jury, they don't have to answer anything. They can ignore it, walk away, and not participate, and they can't do a damn thing. First of all, they're courts not of record, and courts not of record do not have the power to incarcerate or to fine. Yet they do incarcerate and they do fine. Therefore, that's called bribery, or it's called really kidnapping and false imprisonment. That's what all that is. And we're going to make sure the sheriff understands. We've already told him in one of our papers, and we're going to make it more and more clear as time goes on, that when that sheriff gets a prisoner from any town court or city court or any court, okay, they better make sure to check the paperwork to see that due process had taken place, that A, that they had a grand jury and indictment to begin with. That's the first thing that has to happen. And it's got to be a grand jury that's not being controlled by the prosecutor or the judge or the court system. It's got to be a free, unadulterated grand jury. So
right.
If there's no indictment and there's no sworn affidavit, there's no due process, you better not take that prisoner because now you are participating in kidnapping with these courts. You see,
this will shut these courts down.
The other thing, just to make this point, these towns and cities can never afford to pay for the police forces that they have without all of this extra money that they're making through fines and stuff.
Right.
So, again, once the courts start to shut down, the police departments are going to start to deteriorate. Even the state police. The state police is a political police force. It is not a common law police court. It is not something where these policemen are really adhering to the Constitution. They're obeying political situations. They're obeying the governor. Okay.
Yeah, that would be called color of law.
Right. They're operating under color of law. So
right now, there's a form. First of all, I want to talk about due process you were just mentioning before. The people listening on this conversation should be aware that there are numerous, and I mean numerous, federal and Supreme Court cases on the right to travel. For example, I'm just picking on just the right to travel right now. I could pick on a bunch of other things. But just speaking of the right to travel, there's numerous federal cases and Supreme Court cases where the right of travel was brought forth and ruled on, and these Supreme Court and federal courts have ruled that we have the right to transport, as long as we're not driving commercially, as long as we're not making money on the road, you know, for driving, as long as we're just driving for ourselves and to get to work and to pick up our kids from school or get groceries or anything like that. We have the right to go on the road without any driver's license, without any forced insurance, without any license plate on the vehicle, or any other costs than what we need for maintenance on our own machines.
Right. The Supreme Court
is
very clear.
And when you're talking about due process, what you're talking about here is that there have been cases all over the place where it has been decided, yes, you have the right, the individual right to travel in your own vehicle, okay? And these people who are going to court or just paying their fines or just paying their tickets, they're not getting due process. They're not getting equal justice under the law, because if they were getting their due process, they'd be able to bring up these cases, and the judge would say, and they could say, "Judge, I expect due process, and I expect equal justice under the law." And according to all these federal court cases, and there's an inch and a half of them at least, thick of sheets of cases on this stuff. If I had due process, you would recognize my individual right by case law to travel without restriction, and it is not a privilege. It is a God-given right for all Americans to drive on the road wherever and whenever they want to, without any kind of registration for their vehicle or any of those other costs. So I just wanted to clarify for everybody else that that's what you're speaking about, due process. We are not getting our due process with regard to a lot of our rights.
Right.
Our rights are
Once a police officer stops you and detains you, you are being detained. When he's stopping you and you got to stay there and wait for him to call in and make his ticket up and come to you and do all, you've been detained. And right there you've been violated at that moment. Okay?
Right.
And that guy is operating under the color of law. Now, unfortunately, these cops, they don't understand. They're as dumb as we are, and the only difference between us and them ultimately is that we're starting to educate ourselves and understand these things, and we're going to bring them to those same understandings. But look at all of these private police forces, these corporate police officers, because that's what they are. They work for corporations, whether it's a city, a town, or whatever. They're working for a corporation. They're all going to shut themselves down because they're not going to be able to continue, because they're not going to be able to make money, because the people are going to – once the people realize that, wait, you're telling me I don't have to pay the – I can just walk out of this room? That's what, if you want. Or, we'll take you to trial and you could go to jail, or you could get a big fine, or you can just walk out that door. Well, I'm gone. And who in their right mind is going to stay in that courtroom? See, once the people realize that that's it, they're done. Their days are over. They're numbered. They're done. Now, even the state police, there's a problem with the state police because they're still a corporation police. They're working for the state corporation. They're also political, and they're controlled by the governor. You know, here in New York, what do they call him? He's not a commissioner, but superintendent of the state police. He's already, and right now they're trying to move. They claim that they are moving. It hasn't been done yet, but they're moving control of permits for gun permits over to the state police. And when that was announced here in New York about a year or so ago, at a press conference, the the superintendent for the state police was asked, well, you know, if the governor was to give you the order to confiscate guns and take them away from people, will you do it? And he says, absolutely. You see, where the sheriff won't, but this guy will because he doesn't know the Constitution. He's not a constitutional cop. So these guys got to be shut down, too. There are probably a lot of good state troopers. And so that's a good prime place for the sheriff to be able to bring in more people, because with these other police forces closing down, they're going to need to bring more police force into the county under the sheriff, but not much, because ultimately there's no more code enforcement, so they won't need really all that many. But whatever is necessary, they can really pull off of that particular pool, the state police officers, and then teach them the process of being a constitutional officer.
Right, there you go. Now, there's a form, a legal form called COL, and I would recommend that everybody listening to this telephone conversation would find this form. Just do a Google search for form COL. It's called Violation Warning, Denial of Rights Under Color of Law. And what it states here, it's a legal notice and warning. Federal law provides that it is a crime to violate the rights of a citizen under the color of law. You can be arrested for this crime, and you can also be held personally liable for civil damages. Attempting to cause a person to do something by telling that person that such an action is required by law, when it is not required by law, may be a felony. For example, pulling somebody over if you're a cop and saying, hey, you got to have your vehicle license, you got to have a license plate on this, okay? 18 U.S. Code Statute 242 provides that whoever, under color of any law, statute, ordinance, regulation, or custom, willfully subjects any person in any state, territory, commonwealth, possession, or district to the deprivation of any rights, privileges, or immunities secured or protected by the Constitution or the laws of the United States, shall be fined under this title or imprisoned for not more than 1 year or both. 18 U.S.C. Statute 245 provided that whoever, whether or not acting under color of law, intimidates or interferes with any person from participating in or enjoying any benefit, service, privilege, program, facility, or activity provided or administered by the United States or applying for or enjoying employment or any prerequisite thereof by any agency of the United States shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 1 year or both. 42 U.S.C. Statute 1983 provides that every person who, under color of any statute, ordinance, regulation, custom, or usage of any state or territory or the District of Columbia, subjects or causes to be subject any citizen of the United States or person within the jurisdiction thereof to the deprivation of any rights, privileges, or immunities secured by the Constitution and laws shall be liable to the party injured in an action at law, lawsuit in equity, or other proper proceeding for redress. Warning, you may be in violation of federal law and persisting with your demand, in other words, a citation, may lead to your arrest and or civil damages. Also understand that the law provides that you can be held personally responsible and liable, as well as your company or agency. You're advised to cease and desist with your demand and seek personal legal counsel if you do not understand the law. And this is a form that you should
fill out. Well, many of us are familiar with that. There's a lot of good codes under 18 and 42. And, and you know, if you have something that you can send to me, I'll post it up, because it sounds like you have a form that we can put up there. So we'll do that for people to use and utilize. But here's one of the problems. Here's the big problem. And a few months back, 6 months or so ago, one of the people, a friend of ours, had a run-in with the law on all of this stuff, with the driving problems and carrying a weapon and all that stuff. And he told one of the cops, he said, "Look, I'm going to sue you, and I'm going to do this, that, or the other thing." And the cop kind of laughed at him. He says, yeah, all you guys, you talk the same thing, but you don't ever do nothing. The problem is most people don't know what to do and how to do it. You know, we made the same mistake. We would try to fight these people in the town courts or the village courts. And you know, you challenge jurisdiction and they decide their own jurisdiction. And they just keep, you know, steamrolling you down and they do whatever they will with you. But until people realize the process, you see, once you pull an 18 U.S. Code 18 or the 42 in or any of these things, it now becomes a federal case. You have to take it into the federal court. And you shut the court down by going into the federal court. And they have to show cause. You do a writ of mandamus right from that court. Show cause by what authority you act. They can't do it. And of course, to that, they'll default it, and it'll shut that court down. Meanwhile, they've already violated you, so now you're going to sue them. I like the number 25,000 for every violation by every individual. So if there's three or four individuals that conspired against me in a violation, and they maybe violated me in three or four different violations of my unalienable rights, so four times three or whatever that number is times 25,000, that's what I go for. That's what I'm going to go for. Some people like a higher number, but I don't think it's reasonable. I mean, if you go to jail, that's a whole different story because there's not enough money to pay for me my time in jail, and I'll go to get whatever I can, as much as I can from these people. But in any event, the key thing is understanding a no-nonsense attitude, and you have to pick your battles. I mean, I went to court recently, a traffic violation. I did the papers. I went up and told the judge, and he didn't care. He was going forward anyway. And so I just ended paying the fine and walking out. But I got a file. I got a file for tickets I have to deal with that way. And I'm going to sue them all back collectively when I don't have the time. I don't have the time to sue them. So you have to pick your battles. Never argue with the cops in the streets because they have no clue what's going on. Argue with the judge. But make a federal case. We made the big mistake, like everyone else, you know, going back to the courts months on end, month after month after month, back. And then they realize you don't know what you're doing. And they just steamroll you and they get the fines or whatever they're going to get out of you. But you need to give them one chance. I'm here, the special appearance. I'm testing the warrant. It's not real. You don't have authority. This is not a common law process. This is not due process. You need to shut down and leave me alone. They don't do that. They give you, well, come back. We'll go for the trial. Well, that's it. That's when you go to, you make a federal case out of it. If you have the time to do it, you know?
Right.
And the knowledge, you know? You also have to be able to know how to file the papers. It's not that it's a big thing, but you have to learn it,
right.
You know?
Right. So. Okay, John, that's good enough.
Call.
I just wanted to spend some time with you. Okay, thank you very much. Have a good evening.
You too. Thank you.
Yep.
Okay, next caller, Sharon from Connecticut. How you doing, Sharon? Sharon from Connecticut. How you doing, Sharon? And Gerard, by the way, after this call, I'm going to pass it over to you. You there, Gerard?
You promise?
I promise. Sharon from Connecticut. Did you walk away, get a bottle of water or something? Are you muted? Sharon from Connecticut. Last call for Sharon from Connecticut. 860-892. I guess we lost Sharon. Maybe she fell asleep over there. Okay, we'll go to the next caller. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to leave Sharon open for a minute. Let me go to the next caller. I'll open up the next caller. 570-817. Go right ahead.
Hi, John.
Hi. Yes.
Hi, I'm Karen from Pennsylvania.
How you doing, Karen?
I'm hanging in there.
Good.
I'm hanging
Me
in there.
Me too.
I have a question for you. I was set up on a DUI on February 25th. of 2014. As soon as I filed an emergency petition serving abuse in the home.
You get back to your mic because you wandered away from your mic.
Oh.
Go ahead. You there? Hello?
She sounds like a little tiny gnat. She's there really low. We lost her. She's very low.
All the way up there. I don't hear her.
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now. What did you do to get back?
I don't know. I just turned my volume up. I apologize, everybody.
Okay. All right. Go right ahead. What's your question or comment?
Okay. I was set up on a DUI factually. The officer lied in the affidavit. He came to a custody hearing. The subpoena didn't have a seal. He lied under oath. The judge did agree that his testimony was inconsistent. I was forced. My attorney threatened that I had to plead guilty. Now, the DA's office does not like me, nor does the Luzerne County Courthouse, due to the fact that I did sign them out to the FBI. They're under investigation. They know I'm a whistleblower because they've taken my kids away for 9 years for fake medical reasons that my husband makes up. So my question to you is, I plead guilty, but I want to reverse the – I want to plead innocent now. And as we were handing out the common law grand jury books to the judges today, we ran into a district attorney who said that you could file a not guilty plea, even though he said you could do it the day of your sentencing. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, look, you could be, you know, they could arrest you, they could try you, they can convict you. Well, I'm just telling you how far they can go. They can arrest you, they can try you, they can convict you, you can go to jail for many years, you can come out, and then all of a sudden the light bulb goes onto your head and you say, wait a second here, I have just been hijacked, and they violated all of my rights, and you didn't know it then, but you know it now. You see, the moment you discover that you have been violated, you can now go and sue. And at that point, because they violated your... this is the important part of this whole thing, what I'm going to say right now. The important part is this, is the moment you realize that they have violated one of your unalienable rights, the process, the place where you need to be, who has a jurisdiction over this, is in the federal court. You need to take this into the federal court. Not the case, okay? You're not going to take that case into federal, because you're not going to argue the case. The case has nothing to do with you. You're not going to argue the case at all. Your point is they don't have jurisdiction, they hijacked you, they violated your unalienable rights, and you're suing them for that. Meanwhile, the federal case, court case, will shut down the other court, but you have to know how to process and how to do all this stuff. It is kind of simple, but you have to learn it. And
it is simple, I'm good at filing petitions, contempt, all that fun stuff, rule to show cause, things like
right.
that.
So the thing is make a federal case about it. You don't argue the charges. The charges have nothing to do with you.
Right. Well, I knew that it was a setup, and the FBI knew it was a setup right as soon as I filed the emergency petition.
Yeah, well, that's what you do. You file in the federal courts. It's that
okay.
simple. But you have,
okay.
just as long as you know how to do that, and you have to get your jurisdiction. Now, I want to tell you something. When you go into a federal court, okay, what they're going to do is they're going to beat up the state lawyers that come into the court. And they do that, I think the judges do that because they enjoy doing that. That's number one. But they also do it to make you feel a little comfortable saying, I may get justice here. Trust me, you're not going to get justice there either unless you know how to make them give you justice. Because they're going to hijack you into another court also. And you have to make sure you're in a common law court. You have to open up a court of record. And you got to make sure that the judge acknowledges this is a court of law. And the moment he does one of two things, the moment he opens his mouth and makes a decision, you know you're not in a court of record. The moment that he opens his mouth, the moment that you get a paper and they're having a hearing, you know you're not in a court of record. Okay? See, those are the two things. Immediately you know you're in a different court. And you have to challenge that court, challenge that jurisdiction, and let that judge know that he's violating your rights. And when he makes a decision, you have to give him a writ of error, you have to overturn his decision, and then you have to sue him in another court case. You have to open up another court, particularly and specifically for suing that judge and all of the lawyers in that courtroom, because they're all working together in a conspiracy to violate your unalienable rights and to hijack you into another court. So you have to sue them all in another federal court case, separate from that one. And you can't give them the $400. And when they ask for the $400, you tell them, no, I'm one of the people. I don't pay $400. Justice is not does not cost me money. I've already paid for this building. I paid for your salaries and everything else. You don't need no money from me. And if they push you and they push the issue, then you got to sue them too. You see, it's just nothing but filing more and more lawsuits. And they'll get the idea pretty quickly. And once you hold your case and you hold it where they can't really expunge things and they see that you're able to push these things forward and you know what to do after this and that, that's when you're going to get some kind of satisfaction out of the court. Until then, they're going to hijack you over and over and over again. It's the same thing.
They keep doing it. The DA's office, first they told me take an ARD. It's a 3 month on something it's not my blood. I have the blood work. So the cop committed perjury.
Well, I don't want to get too deep into the court case itself, but generically, just make a federal case about it. There's nothing else to really worry about. And all these things that you talk about with the FBI if they lied and things like that and you can prove it, you take it right into the federal court and you're suing them for those things. You don't even talk about the DUI?
Yes.
Yeah, you don't even talk about that. It has nothing to do with your court case in the federal level. They bring that up, you object. That's nothing to do with this case. What are you bringing that in? We're talking about you violating me, hijacking me into a foreign court. That's what we're here about. And first of all, second of all, you turn to the judge and you let him know, I don't even understand why I'm here trying to defend this, because we're in a court of record and you shouldn't be hearing this case. This is the cases to be heard by a jury. So either, you know, are we in a common law court here, judge? Are we in a court of record or are we in a statutory court? Can you tell me what the jurisdiction is? And he's going to ignore that question. He's going to, you know, say, okay, enough already. Let's move on. Whatever. He's going to do something. He's just not going to answer that question. And whatever he's done for that day, when you go home, you have to do a writ of error, overrule him, and move on. And if you don't know how to do those things or you don't have the ability to do those things and because you're afraid or whatever the case may be, then you're going to lose. Don't even bother fighting because you're going to lose.
I'm not afraid of them. I reported all of them, so I'm not afraid of them at all.
All right, well, that's what you got to do. You got to stay in the federal, you got to take it to the federal court and maintain your jurisdiction. You have to watch like a hawk because they'll move you into their jurisdiction in a blink of an eye. Before you know it, you're in the wrong place.
Okay.
And they're abusing you. You got to watch.
I know exactly what they're doing.
But things are about to change. I think. With what we're doing,
which is good. This is really good. That when me and another member were down there, while I was taking care of getting a subpoena to get the 911 call, she was delivering the common law grand jury books to the judges. And the one DA who told me what to do with the case and plead not guilty, he said, "Oh, that's coming. That's already in process in Luzerne County."
Mm-hmm.
So that's a good thing.
Well, yeah. Look, the courts right now in the past 2-3 weeks are buzzing and buzzing and buzzing about the common law. They're buzzing about NLA. They're buzzing about the grand juries, the common law grand juries. They're buzzing about the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. They've been hit with papers for the last 2 weeks, two papers a week for the last 2 weeks. And it continues 2 weeks, two more, then we've got two more coming, and we'll be writing more after that also. But let me tell you, the pressure's on, and they're seeing us advising the sheriff as to recognize the violations in the court and his authority and duty to arrest that judge immediately. You know, they got to worry now when they turn to look to see that bailiff, and he's listening, and I'm dealing with, and that judge is dealing with one of the people. And he's got to wonder on whether this guy realizes what he's doing, that he's violating his unalienable rights. I think we're going to get a lot of victories, and people aren't going to understand why all of a sudden, but it's because the pressure we put on. And when you go into the court, and especially people who are connected with us, and they call up, Eric with, the court watchers group, and people come down there, and we come down there with pencils and papers, and they know who we are. They know who National Liberty Alliance is and the court watchers. And believe me, they're going to want you out of that courtroom. That's what they're going to want. So there's going to be a lot of wins, I think, we're not even going to realize. But people are going to be reporting that things are changing in the courtrooms. New York City is buzzing very, very heavy. So heavy that the chief judge, the one of the top, there are eight judges that control all of New York State. And one of those top judges down there has already called for the revamping of the grand jury. They want to tighten it up. They're so frightened of us. Now they, and this is before we even hit the federal courts with the paperwork that we're hitting them with. They were so frightened of us that they decided that they wanted to take the grand jury control away from the prosecutors because they no longer can trust the prosecutors because of the pressure we've been putting on them. And so they want the judges to take control also of the grand jury here in New York. They've already got control of the trial jury. So they think they're going to be able to defeat us that way. But they have another thing coming. They don't understand how things work. But now with the federal papers going in, they got to be worrying about even what they're doing. They're not going to get that kind of control. And we've already indicted those eight judges, by the way. All of them have been indicted. That's why they're doing what they're doing. They're trying to take control back, and they're trying to shut us down. But they have not been able to do that. And they're not going to be able to do that because when you read our papers, all we're saying is to obey the law. That's all we want. And any command we give, it's obeying the law. We tell them where the law is. Obey this law. It's that simple. But anyway, I think there's going to be a lot more victories and people without having to really go through much effort anymore. And things, the times, they are changing. It's about to happen. We're coming. They know it. Did we lose that caller? I don't see that caller there anymore.
Yeah, I don't know what happened to her. I don't know.
Well, let me pass it over to you. You can take the next caller. I'm going to mute out and listen in. I'm going to go for a bottle of water, though, but be back in a few minutes.
Okay, hello? Next caller. Yes, go ahead. You're unmuted.
Yes, I called probably a couple of weeks ago. I'm a new member here at the National Liberty Alliance.
Yeah.
My name's Brad. I'm in Pennsylvania. I'm actually in Schuylkill County, so I'm just south of that last caller.
Okay.
And I've just started to, get involved in this. I've been going through the civics exam and stuff of that nature. And I just had a couple questions regarding the letters that were sent out. Have you gotten any responses regarding these letters?
We've gotten a few responses, like from different officials, like take me off of the mailing, and what we're doing is we're working on some generic responses back because they can't be taken off. You know, they're public officials; they don't have a choice. You know, that's our fax machine. There's another problem out there. You know, a lot of these court systems, and Pennsylvania seems to be one of the ones that's really bad about it because they have what they call a patentary office where all the paperwork goes in. Mm-hmm. So what they've done is they have multiple officials sharing fax machines, and apparently they haven't digitized them. And so when we send out a 8 or 10 or 15 paper thing to you know, a judge or multiple judges or multiple congresspeople, and they're all coming in on that one fax machine, they're hollering that we're jamming their fax machines up. Well, they took a bunch of money. The federal government paid them all under the Paperwork Reduction Act. And recently, they've had a lot of grants to make this stuff all digital. That stuff should never be going to paper in that office. You know, if you're a sheriff or you're a congressman or a senator, you know, if they want to set up one central fax machine, it should be going to a digital mailbox, and it should not be printing until he opens it up and asks it to print. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, we're basically telling them, look, deal with it. So we're kind of in the process of that. You know, we did have a judge that replied something to do with the, you know, she said, oh, well, you got to do procedure 40 or something. And we had sent the reply to that saying, you know, we're not part of those procedures. So we haven't had any real good sink your teeth in responses, if you know what I mean.
Okay.
Most of the time they just ignore, you know, and then we move on with the next paper. I mean, look at how are they going to respond? They're only going to respond in one of two ways. They can either say you're right, or they could say, well, we're not under the Constitution, so we don't care about you. So either way, it's sort of a death sentence for them. So I don't know, you know, what they could say.
Now, John had mentioned that next week, you know, that you guys are really going to be, you know, taking them to task. I mean, is that in the form of just other letters going to the federal level? Is that what he's insinuating? Is there something that we should be looking at that's going to, you know, come out of that?
Well, let me just make one point to you. We're not really writing letters. These are writs, okay? And there's a difference between a writ and a letter, although a writ is kind of a letter.
I'm not really versed in this.
Okay.
I'm still learning right now.
Yeah, that's all right. This is good for education for everyone anyway, because what we have done, though, is we have opened a court, okay? We have a court of record open right now. Right at this moment, up until now, I don't think they realized or understood what we're doing. Right now, they know what we're doing. They understand what we have done. And we have put them in a box, and they're stuck. Now, they're going to have to humble themselves and start obeying and doing the right thing. And that's hard for them to do because they're used to being the boss. They're all high and mighty. And, you know, they're the king. And now they got to be the servant, and they don't want to do that. So they got a decision to make, because if they don't
when you said you opened a court, so you have a suit against somebody already where you are the plaintiff and
this
you've brought them into a common law?
We're the prosecutor at this point. We, the people,
okay,
are prosecuting the case in the court right now. And we're going through the whole process as the King's Bench. We're not only the prosecutor, we're also the jury. So it's our decision making. We're not asking them anything. We're giving them commands through writs of mandamus. A mandamus means we command you. Quo vanto, you know, by what authority, number one. And it really is a very serious paper, because that paper is if you don't have the authority, we're taking your head off now. Okay, so it's really, really a very powerful paper. We haven't really expounded much on how powerful that is, but in the near future,
I went through. I remember Bill Thornton mentioned that he used that writ. So, I'm new. I'm just trying to get completely through the civics exam, you know, to find my place where I'm going to operate with the National Liberty Alliance. I'm new. I've almost got through the whole course. I mean, it's a big course. It's very well put together, and I want to say I appreciate
hours,
that.
So. But let me pass this back to Gerard. I just wanted to pipe into that point to make that point that
John,
is a court case. But go ahead, continue.
I just wanted to expand on that civics course. That civics course is lots of meat and potatoes. I mean, I haven't turned my TV on in probably 3 weeks. I mean, I've just been trying to get through that and learning and YouTube is my friend at this point, and got a bunch of books. But like I said, I'm here in Pennsylvania. I'm an Oath Keeper. I'm a Desert Storm veteran, and I see what's going on. And I just can't wait to get this country back and where it needs to be.
So there you go. Spread the word and bring some of the young people, and they need to be educated.
Yes, sir.
You know, it's happening. Okay. Thank you for that. I was going to move on if you got nothing else.
Nope, that's it. Go ahead.
Thank you. Yeah.
Hi, Jason from Jersey. How you doing?
Hey, Jason. How you doing?
Great show tonight. Everyone's really got good stuff to say. That deputy sheriff, good luck on what you're doing, and we need you in the program. And the more people of like-minded people make us, we are very dangerous to them, because we are fearless. We are think for ourselves and we act on our own. And that may be describing a lone wolf, but we are nonviolent, and we want to use the law to take back what they have usurped from us. I don't have necessarily a question. I'm reaching out GREG. It's been a long day for me. For the program, for the paperwork that I'll be working with for my case coming up. And it was so great that Lydia came on right after me with her stuff. And people don't know me. I'm on Shake and Wake Radio on Mondays and Fridays, 2 to 4, on with Stone Soup, and anybody wants to hear or be participating more for Liberty on there, I'll ask questions or as best I can. If I don't know, I'll just, you know, do research on it. But again, you guys are doing a fantastic job. I'm sorry that I couldn't hear everything because I was having a problem with my computer. And I couldn't, tonight there was a problem trying to get onto the service through the phone program. So anyway, I don't necessarily have a question per se, but I'm really glad that the issue of militia is coming up because I've been bringing that up for some time, and I'm really glad that the militia idea is getting along, not wanting to draw blood, but be part of the solution to this RICO that's been going on for so long. And again, in New Jersey, I actually have the sheriff in Hudson County is out of order, and so is the U.S. Marshal for not working with do my claim of violence, it wasn't violence, but injury to me, when the attorney and the clerk returned my paperwork that I put in for the record. And that was Judge Abad and the chief judge violating my rights to a jury. But these things are going to come together, and I'm really glad after 2 years things are coming together. I'm sorry that we've had a lot of people drop out, but again, it's all about
we haven't really had a lot of people drop out. We've had people drop out. We've had more people come in, you know. Look at, you know, some of the people that drop out is because they have preconceived ideas. So, you know, when you have a certain preconceived idea, it's very hard to educate yourself, you know. I mean, if your head is, if your head is full of yellow and my head is blue and I'm pouring my blue into your yellow, you know, you're coming up with a different color, you know.
A green.
And until I can get enough of my color in there, you're not going to understand what I'm talking about. And so it's hard. We have, you know, the biggest people we have trouble with are people who are lawyers and educated people and politicians, because they think they know everything. They think they know the way the system's supposed to be, because they do know the system that we have, and they know how they've been operating. And there's a certain comfort, you know, in precedent. You know, oh, we've been doing this way all along, so we must be right. And that's a problem. So look, you got a lot. Everybody's got big battles, but the more we chip at this, and the more they hear about us, the quicker they'll fall. You know, each level that you go into, Jason, it's like John says, you're going to have multiple lawsuits, because each one of those people that violate you, you have to take them, and you have to take them to task, and you have to put them in the case. You have to sue them personally in the federal court. So
yes.
That's why you have to be careful picking your battles, because you're gonna be filling out paperwork and paperwork and paperwork, and you're gonna be doing lots and lots of, you know, different lawsuits. And you know, for us in the past, what we considered a victory was, look, if you get to a certain point and you got five or six judges that you got rid of and different prosecutors, and finally they give you a deal and they say, look, just go. You know, and so they give you a win, but it's not on the record. It's nothing that anybody else can follow you with. You know, they make you an offer that you can't refuse. And sometimes they even give money in it. But the part of the deal of them giving money is you can't tell anybody. You know, they put a gag order on it. But you're going to see more and more. You're going to see more and more victories. And that's, you know, that's not going to. They used to be willing to let one or two people go because it wasn't worth the effort. And, you know, there's a lot of people in there, and a lot of people are educating themselves. So I just think it's going to get easier. So we appreciate your comments and your insights there. And look, you got to just keep plugging. So you started now. I guess you got to finish, right?
Yeah, well, again, a man is never a loser in a race, even if it's the last one coming in off the finish line, because he started something, he finished something he started. And that's a thought. With the big thing with Gina and the family court, one thing we really need is to have a very effective public news releases. Again, when I was listening to John before, I mean, if each one of us makes our own little editorial of 150 words, send it out, whatever the issue is, and we understand that we have a vow to protect the Republic and be responsible. That would be starting a chain reaction. Why these people start sending this out? You know, whatever you do, be positive. I mean, it's very easy to be negative in a negative world, but if you're positive, they think those people think you're nuts. And if you're, I mean, you're positive, you're drawing in the goodness of the Lord God, whoever your God is, and you're being a multiplier. And that's key in the movement. It's just being that positive person. I mean, we're seeing Christie is in New Jersey and wants to become governor. This man can't even sit down with his own constituents to talk about the Second Amendment, the militia, and plus he is a man who alienates people and is disrespectful. Excuse me, this man will start World War IV the way he is and his attitude. And remember, folks, Governor Christie is a control queen. Not that he's gay, this is the queen. And he would not permit anyone to do anything without a say-so with the war.
Well, let me just say that people like Christie and that are going to be the last people to get this. By the time he gets it, we're going to already have victory. So, listen, I give up on the political scene because they got it so controlled and so locked down. It's ridiculous. You can have little victories in certain areas where you take over parties in certain towns. But believe me, we've seen every sort of scam and RICO going on in the parties. It's disgusting. John and I went through that for many years. We learned all the nasty things that they're doing, and we took them to court, and the judges looked at us like they were a bunch of frogs up there with Google eyes. So, you know, they didn't even read the paperwork. So it's like, politically, it would take so many years to straighten this party system out. That's why we're here today where we are, because we went through all that. But look, and I got people we got to get here, Jason.
All right, thank you very much for the opportunity.
Go on here. Okay, next question. We got Donald from Michigan.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
All right. I heard something earlier, and there's a lot of people on this call. I know that we need a whole lot of education. But he said it when John was taking the calls, and John let it go right by, and I really took offense and fell right off my chair. I'm the Oakland County coordinator here in Michigan, but I'm also the Michigan POC point of contact. I'm a de facto chapter president for the Oath Keepers here in Michigan. And a gentleman came on this line and made the blatantly ignorant statement that the Oath Keepers are like the Branch Davidians. And nothing was said when he said that. That couldn't be farther from the truth. They're a very honorable organization, more so than a lot of other groups out there. I won't mention what I was going to say.
I must have missed that. I came in late today. I didn't get in. Well, that must
have
been. Yeah,
he was in Florida, and he was saying people are saying that joining the militia is, they think it's worse than the Oath Keepers, which are like the Branch Davidians, and I fell right off of my chair. And I really took offense to that, and I wish that John had straightened him out. But I guess, and Richard Mack, very fine gentleman, and he's running a great organization, but he's not the Oath Keepers. He doesn't represent the Oath Keepers. And I guess that until NLA really understands who and what the Oath Keepers is and what they're about, I guess I'm going to ask y'all to just not talk about them at all until you sit down and have an interview with somebody. And you guys get a good understanding
many NLA people are also Oath Keepers, and were Oath Keepers before they were NLA members. I'm an Oath Keeper, and I've taken oaths, and I'm an Oath Keeper, and
You're a member of the Oath Keepers?
Yeah, absolutely.
And you let that guy get away with calling us Branch Davidian?
I wasn't on the call, so I didn't hear that. John probably didn't understand the Branch Davidian.
That was a pretty ignorant statement, and I fell off my chair. So
Nobody said
anything since then, so I wanted to come on here and straighten that out.
Listen, Oath Keepers are basically people who are either active and retired and have taken an oath in the military, in the law enforcement, that everybody knows they're not Branch Davidians. I mean, look, you want to hear some slander, you should see what they're saying about us. You go to the Southern Poverty Law Center. Go to the ADL. They say the same thing about the Oath Keepers because, look, they have to discredit you. You know what I mean? Yeah. And that's what they do. First they ignore you, then they discredit you. You know, they want to make you sound crazy or kooky. And I'm sure John didn't catch the Branch Davidian. Not everybody knows what Branch Davidians are, you know what I mean?
That is not a group we want said in the same sentence. Let me just say that there's three prongs to the Oath Keepers mission, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The first prong and why the Oath Keepers was first founded was shortly after the 9/11, and Obama started talking about American soldiers firing on Americans. And so the first mission of the Oath Keepers was, we call it RTI, Reach, Teach, and Inspire. Billboards went up everywhere, and it was basically just to go out and reach out to servicemen, firemen, and law enforcement and remind them about the oath they took and that the oath was to the Constitution and not to the White House. So that's all we did in the beginning, was just reach out to our servicemen and say, hey, you know, don't be firing on Americans. You got to remember your oath. You took the oath and you got to live up to it. And that oath is lifelong, whether you're still current serving or not. And that oath is to the Constitution.
I see that they are redoing their billboard effort now along the highways. They put
a big
shot of money into the billboards, which is good. And they're showing not only military, they're showing everybody. That's a good thing.
Yeah, so the second prong was to teach people how to prepare for disasters, okay, hurricanes, floods, and collapse of the dollar, you know, how to go out and set aside some food for yourself, some first aid capability, energy supply, you know, guns and ammunition to be used only in self-defense. We are not a proactive, aggressive organization. We're not going to go out and attack anybody, but it's just teaching you how to defend yourself. And if you went to our website, you're a member. There's pages upon pages upon pages upon pages upon pages. I mean, you think there's a lot of stuff up at the NLA site. There's just a plethora of information about how to prepare, how to store food, energy, first aid, like I said, about anything that you can think of. So that was the second prong of the mission. The third prong of our mission is to go out into our communities with what's called CPT, Civilization Preservation Teams, okay? And it's basically, we're like special ops guys. Special ops guys are not an offensive unit. Special ops guys drop into a community. They've got a weapons expert. They have an engineer. They have a first aid guy. They have a food prep guy. And there's actually like seven different disciplines. You have two people in each discipline. You drop into a community, and you're already experts in those areas. And you teach that community how to develop those skills themselves. First you train yourself, then you go into that community or that neighborhood or that subdivision, and you train them and teach them so that when there is no firemen, when there are no policemen, when there is no electricity, when there are no grocery stores, when a tree falls on a house, what do you do? How do you guys, we're going to teach you how to be self-sustained, okay? So that's what the CPT, a Civilization Preservation Team, is just that. So those are the three prongs of our mission, okay? And nowhere in there did you hear anything about going in and blowing anything up or setting things on fire or attack. That's not us. That's not what we do. We're all about just, reminding the military to honor your oath and then teaching people how to survive and forming up teams to go into neighborhoods and do that. That's what the Oath Keepers are. So I hope Mr. Branch Davidian is still listening, and I really hope that he never says anything that ignorant again.
Not only that, I could really go further afield than that. I don't know that the Branch Davidians were violent people just because they had guns. They really had nothing on them. There was no reason for their
stigma. There's a stigma associated with them you're a bunch of Branch Davidians, then it puts that stigma on people.
They're going to put the stigma on us and everybody else. Look, I was in government, and one of the things, the government, you can go on to all the FEMA sites, and they got all that survival information there that you're talking about. They tell you, make a bug-out bag, and you should have so much water, you should be prepared. And then, on the other hand, you got the president's executive order saying, we can come in and take any of your stored food, we can grab your garden, we can get all this stuff. If you're storing food, you're hoarding, and we got this section and that section. So on one hand, they're telling you to store stuff, and on the other hand, they're telling you they can take it away from you. So
right, exactly.
it's all baloney. And I don't – look, if it was on the news and they said David Koresh was a bad guy, I almost believe he's a good guy, okay? Because that's where I'm at today. So I don't believe any of the bullshit that the news tells me, okay? And so whatever that guy says that the Oath Keepers are like the Branch Davidians, well, I don't know. Maybe he's like the head of the UN or something. Maybe he likes the Gorbachev committee over there, the Biosphere committee. I don't know.
Yeah, I know what most people's perceptions are, and I wanted to come on here and clear that up.
Yeah, I understand. Okay, well, we appreciate that. I'm going to move on. We've got a couple people.
Gerard?
Yeah.
Gerard. Yeah, this is Gary. Hey, I thought that it might be nice to put out a little bit of information of some good news right now.
Okay.
I don't know if anybody knows that the U.S. Senate has voted 53-46 against the UN resolution 2117 for gun grab.
No kidding.
Yep.
Because those
did that happen?
Today.
Excellent.
So yeah. They're starting to feel the heat because their numbers were not there before. And as far as I was concerned, they were all bought and paid for. So something's going on where they're actually getting a little backbone where they're gonna get together and vote against this stuff, right?
I think they're realizing there's some people out there.
Right, right.
And Gary, what was that count again?
Well, don't forget today. 46. Don't forget today, though. They received our papers today on the Second Amendment. So that timing is perfect for us, maybe.
Yeah, I think
hands,
so.
Maybe, you know?
Fortuitous. But
yeah,
I mean,
yeah, well, Gary,
point number
Gary,
11.
Sorry, when Gary repeated the count, I didn't hear it because John broke on. What
was 53-46? Closer than I'd like to see.
And you know what? The 46 that voted for it, we should kick them out of office. They're treasonous.
You bet.
Absolutely.
That's an
Absolutely.
Unconstitutional law. Come on.
In fact, is there a way that we can actually find out who those 46 are? Is sending them?
It's listed. It's public knowledge.
I think
it'll be public.
I think that would be a good idea.
Yeah, you can bet most senators from Michigan were on the yes side, Gary.
Yes, Stabenow. Yes, I know Stabenow was all. She's big government.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. That's encouraging. We need more of it. And like you said, it's hard for these people, and this is my argument with the sheriffs, too, is it's hard for them to act if they don't think that the people are behind them. They're political animals. They need the people to be elected. And, and then you got governor saying, I'll take you out of office if you don't follow my rules.
Right. And well, the criticism out there is if it weren't for the midterm elections, we would have lost. So the press is like, well, we should have really had this vote 6 months ago. We had the votes because this is what the people need. Yeah, right. That's what they need.
Right.
That's
very
hilarious.
Good. Well, that's good.
Yeah, so I'll get back, let you go on to your next caller.
Okay. Thank you, Donald, by the way. Florida Greg, you're unmuted. Go ahead.
Are you Florida Greg?
You got it.
Hey, guys, I want to concur with that gentleman just said. We need to contact the 53 and let them know thank you for representing us, the people, and inform the 46 that they need to step down.
Right.
That's all I want to say.
Totally.
I think what we'll do is we'll go after the 47 and write them a bill of contempt.
I agree, John. We do need to inform them. But we also need to know the ones that did vote properly, that we recognize they did so.
Absolutely. So we'll get a copy of that voting record, and we're going to respond to that.
Fantastic. Thank you.
And I wouldn't mind hand-delivering mine to my two state senators.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
And why don't we try to hand-deliver them to all of them?
No, I'm going to D.C. week after next.
Well, let's get it done before you go out. You can take them with you.
I'll
take
a big old backpack.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, this is Greg Todd. I'm in the call if anybody needs me. Thank you.
Okay, yeah. Bye-bye. Okay, I got 8610, last numbers, no name. You're unmuted.
Hi. Hi, my name's Alexandra. I'm from Michigan. I'm a mother with... Why am I doing this DPF class action? I just didn't know. I tried contacting an intake receptionist, and it was supposed to be Sally out of Grand Rapids, Michigan. And she had told me Gina isn't getting back with her about the spreadsheets, like how she's supposed to do the paperwork. So I didn't know. I thought like there was a deadline was supposed to be the beginning of June, and I just don't want to miss that. So,
right. Well, call Gina. Call Gina tomorrow, the next day, or call Sheila, and ask them for help, or ask them what's going on. They'll clue you in on what's really going on and help you out. But here's one of the problems, because I spoke with them, not Gina particularly. I didn't speak with Sheila and a few others. One of the problems is that people are not getting their affidavits in, and that's always a problem. And you have to do your sworn statement. You know, sworn statements, you can't get into the court. And people are dragging their feet for whatever reasons, so we're going to move forward with those who've got the papers done.
So the affidavit is where it says being of lawful age, qualified, and competent.
Right, it's your story. You have to tell your story.
Okay,
and
yeah. I have that all done. I'm just waiting to get it notarized, but... The intake receptionist told me, she wanted to look over it before I got it notarized. And so then I called her today, actually, and had said, what am I supposed to fill out? What am I supposed to do next? And she said she had quit because Gina wasn't giving her the proper information about the spreadsheet. And my concern is missing...
Right.
The deadline.
Well, look. Don't worry about it. Just call Sheila or Gina tomorrow and find out who you should be talking to. And make sure your paper's in. And we'll be right before we hit the deadline. We'll probably call a special meeting, and I'll probably lead it to make sure everybody knows what's going on and what they need to do. And at a certain point, at midnight on a certain date, if they're not done with it, then they're going to be held off till the following month. And then every month we'll add more people on, but they'll be held back another month.
That's good. Okay.
And in your affidavit, if you just tell your story, and just make sure that you're telling the truth and tell it like you would.
Yeah. I got that
really
all done.
That much editing to be done on it. You know what I mean? I mean, you could even write them in pen and ink. I mean,
does length matter? Because mine's pretty long. It's 6 pages.
I think that you don't. I don't know that you need anything that long. Why is it so long?
I was just so detailed about everything that went on wrong with my case, including the adoption process too.
Go ahead, Gerard.
I was just wondering how long has this process been going on for her?
Since 2012, my case opened. And the adoption process is, they're trying to finalize it right now with non-relative placement.
Yeah, okay. Well, look at this is what we're going to do. Well, look, what you need to do is get a hold of Gina, find out who you should be talking to go through it, and maybe someone will help you to shorten it up if it needs to be shortened up, or maybe it all belongs in there, you know, but
yeah.
You know, it sounds like a lot, 6 pages, but
yeah,
you do want to tell
your
story, and you don't want to leave nothing out, so I don't know.
Yeah, I went all the way to the Supreme Court, and I've gotten nowhere with this.
Well, talk with Gina or Sheila tomorrow, okay?
Okay, thank you.
All right.
Thank you, Alexandria. Paul from Hawaii, you're unmuted. Go ahead.
Aloha, Paul here. Things are really acting up out here in Hawaii, too. I've been rushing back and forth to our county center, et cetera. People are taking a stand. We will not leave Mauna Kea, the mountain, and Governor Ige is going to force this issue, so we may have more than just a Mexican standoff here.
Oh, geez. Okay.
Yeah, that's all I wanted to report, and I appreciate knowing the information about the guns. I'm going to spread that word tonight.
Yeah. So I do keep track of your emails when you send them to me, Paul. So I appreciate you, you know, keeping me up to date on that stuff and what's
okay,
going on.
Okay, sure. Yeah.
Your stuff is good. Okay.
So we're doing what we need to do here to keep home rule.
Yeah.
And you guys just keep doing what you're doing because it appears to be working for all of us.
Yeah, we're waiting for the people, for those people like your governor to have his Helen Keller moment when it all comes flooding in and he realizes that people are in control.
He's getting it now. Our mayor is going to be what do we call when we take him out?
Recall.
Yeah.
Right.
Thank you. I'm just so confused here tonight. So it's a wonderful day in paradise.
There you go. And especially
in
Hawaii, right?
The hurricane is coming. It's apparently building strength. And we've had rain for the last couple of days and overcast. So solar is taking a beating.
Yeah.
All right. That's enough out of me. Aloha.
Okay, well, see you later. Ann from Tennessee, go ahead.
Yes, sir. I have a question about an email on May the 21st. Is that allowed on this call, or I have to wait for another call?
An email about what? Say that again. I'm sorry, I didn't hear.
Yes, sir. It's about Sheila sent an email on May the 21st regarding Stephen Denver, and Gary sent a follow-up on May the 21st saying to ignore it. And I want clarification on why was it to be ignored.
Well, that was on who was that,
that
on?
That was on Steve Nolte.
Yeah, Steve Nolte.
Colorado debacle.
Right. Now we there was a call out made to call the courts for him, but you see Steve Nolte left NLA in dishonor. And why would we come to his aid in the court when he did stuff that caused us to ban him as a member? For filing things that were going to get us in trouble, that look like us, that, you know what I mean, and not sticking to our protocol. So, yeah, he had a problem. He had a legal problem. But he's not a person that we want to line up with, you know, making phone calls and stuff for, because we don't agree with his premises.
Right, and especially if he actually damaged somebody.
Right.
He was a reckless driver, and he caused an accident. So we have to be very cautious on whose defense we come to, that if we jump to somebody's defense that is actually under common law, guilty or, you know, culpable for a crime.
Right. That was
we have to be very careful.
Right. We look at even if Steve Nolte left us in dishonor, if he had a good case where they like beat him up for no reason, we're not saying we wouldn't come to his aid because he left us in dishonor. Look, if you're right, you're right. But like Gary says, even his case was a little funny as far as us not wanting to line up with it because there was an injured party. You know what I mean? He did have a problem. And so we don't want to go making phone calls and running off and supporting somebody before we get all the facts of what actually happened. And so that's what that was about. It was an accident, that jumped the gun to call the court and bring the court watchers in and stuff. And we called them off because we just didn't think the case was good for NLA. Okay. And, right. and then we're going to end up doing that from time to time, I guess.
Yeah. And so now we're establishing a process to vet, so that we don't accidentally jump to somebody's defense that maybe should not be.
Yeah, which, by the way, Gary, that also happened. That other thing I was telling you about with those arrests out west, we're going to stay away from that.
Oh, okay. I had a feeling.
It's not good. After I researched it some more, there's just too many unsavory characters involved in that would not want them, being part of us.
Yes.
It's just too crazy who's right and who's wrong. And
right.
They got some real nasty fellows there, and so it's not good for us.
Yes,
but
gotcha.
Again, you read the first story, you look at the first information that comes out, and you say, oh, my goodness, what is this? And then when you look deeper, you find out, oh, guess what? There's more than what meets the eye. And that's actually, truthfully, that's the grand jury process now, isn't it? What we're doing. So
I think so.
Anyway, I hope that's satisfactory. I hope we answered that question for you there.
Yes, sir, but you brought up something, and now I have a second question to this,
okay.
To this email.
Okay, really quickly.
Now, there's a group called the Courtroom Observers. If there are a process that when someone is in a court action, they want to use the court wanto that's on the website, do they need to get prior approval? Can they just go ahead and use it in their court action?
No, you could use a court wanto in your court action. You don't need our thing, just as long as you're doing it for yourself. And you're not using our name. You're not using, the common law grand jury. But you can use that process. You could take that form, and you could put your own information in and use it. I don't see, any of the paperwork that we teach in common law, it's all available to a person doing a private suit. So if you think you can make it fit into your suit somehow, you can definitely use it. You just don't want to mention the common law grand jury. You're doing it as a sovereign in your own court. Is the way that you got to approach it.
Okay. And the very last thing, I'm an intake coordinator at CPS,
mm-hmm.
and I sent an email. We need the CPS, the NLA needs bilingual people, and mm-hmm. also, if possible, could someone put on the website the when the deadline is set, so people would know in case they miss a call. And does anyone have does anyone have a contact number for Lydia? I contacted Sheila through email, but the number she gave me was incorrect.
I emailed you the phone number today, Anna.
Oh, you did? Okay, I haven't had a chance to check
it. Yeah.
Okay, that's all I need, and I yield.
Okay.
Thank you, Anna. We got the last caller. I'm hell-bent for election here. I want to get him in. Go ahead, Carl. Are you there?
Yeah, Gerard, do you hear me?
Yeah, gotcha.
Hello, Gerard. Okay.
Yeah.
I just wanted to mention that that Senate vote that was spoke about, that report about the UN Arms Trade Treaty being knocked off by the Senate, that report was very accurate. The only thing about it was that was back from March 23rd of 2013, actually, according to The Hill and according to The New American. So that's actually, 2 years old news.
Oh, no kidding.
Yep. Yeah, that's 2 years old. Yep.
I'm thankful. Okay. I was just sent the email, and it sounded like such good news, I couldn't help it.
Yeah, I've done the same thing, so don't feel bad. But it is certainly good news. It's just that it's 2 years old. So,
now,
but thank you very much, guys. That's really all that I have for the night. I just wanted to bring that to your attention.
Well, thank you.
Didn't Obama say he was going to go ahead and do it through executive order anyway? Isn't that what happened after that vote?
Yeah, I heard he was going to do that.
Yeah, he said, well, I'll just put it in through executive order, as if he could get away with that. So that was his response to that. But anyway, look it. We should still go back, and we should still send those papers to those guys, even from
those 46, even 2 years ago.
That's right. We should still, because now they're getting our mail, you know, and maybe now they'll see what the consequences is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that's our last call. So,
okay, all right, we're going to end things for the evening. And thanks everybody for being here. And Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday. Next Monday is the big one. We have some really good news to be talking about, and probably so much we won't be able to do it all on one day. We'll probably have to break it up between two Mondays. But the most important stuff we'll get in Monday. But anyway, with that, Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday. Thanks for everybody coming. Good night.
Night.
Good night, everybody.
Nothing's good, the news is bad. The heat goes on and it drives you mad. Scornful thoughts that fly your way, you should turn away, 'cause there's nothing more to say. Hey.